keys on with the Republicans. Talk about a crazy man. And they didn't invite...
This is the Quality News Network. The European Union just became stronger today with the stroke of a pen. EU leaders signed a historic treaty in Lisbon today that creates a replacement constitution and a new president. Germany, France, and Poland have all pledged to be the first countries to ratify it so new reforms can take place by the year 2009. The European Union will boycott next month's U.S. climate talks unless America budges on its current position at the UN conference in Bali. European delegates want the White House to accept a range of numbers concerning reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. It is a day of reckoning for the world of Major League Baseball, as some of the league's brightest stars are named in the Mitchell Report on illegal steroid use. More than 50 players are identified, including veteran star pitcher Roger Clemens and newly indicted Barry Bonds. The Mitchell Report took 20 months to complete. It was compiled by former Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell. He was hired by Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig. Mitchell recommends that no punishment be given. Selig says he'll deal with each player on a case-by-case basis. A mistrial has been declared in Miami, Florida, in the case of seven defendants charged with attempting to blow up the Sears Tower in Chicago. The jury cleared one defendant, but was unable to reach a verdict on the other six. Prosecutors say they possibly will try the suspects, known as the Liberty City Seven, again next year. Democratic presidential candidates debated for the last time on the same stage before Iowa caucus on January 3rd. Rival candidates called for an end to the Iraq War and for higher taxes on the wealthiest Americans. Russia says contracting disputes with Tehran have been resolved, now ready to announce a timetable for construction of Iran's first nuclear power plant. The House narrowly approved a ban on waterboarding as a legal interrogation technique, the technique already outlawed by the U.S. Army Field Manual and the Geneva Convention. Another deadly bombing this morning in Mogadishu. At least 57 people have been killed or wounded in northeast India. Officials are blaming local insurgents for today's bombing of a passenger train. The U.S. State Department says it'll cut the number of diplomats in Washington and embassies abroad by 10%. Very soon. You're listening to the Quality News Network, a check of business, just ahead. Now this message.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? 2/3 are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Is this thing on? Oh, Lord, I love surprises when the program starts. Went to play the top of the hour news, and lo and behold, I got thump. So I stopped it, and I went thump. Stopped it again, and thump. You know, insanity, of course, is defined as repeating the same thing time and time again and expecting a different result. I'm crazy. So my apologies for the weird beginning of the program, but I'm here. It's live. It's Friday. It's Front Porch Friday. You know, when we kick back and grab hold of that jug over there with the corn cob stopper in it, take a couple of good swallers out of it, and just get off our chest whatever's on our chest and cuss and discuss, carry on a little bit. Everybody all at one time, that kind of thing. You know what I mean. So, you know, that's what Front Porch Friday is all about. Of course, it... It started weirdly, you know. What's a poor boy to do, huh? But we'll get through. I got to admit, when things don't go right at the very start of the program, it addles me a little bit. But you know, being a professional broadcaster, I will get through this without throwing anything or having a hissy or anything along those lines. Right? Yeah. Okay, so the question becomes one of, you know, what are you into this evening? What do you got in mind? Anything in particular just sort of burning you up? I got a couple of things. Not a bunch, but I got a couple. And I think that... I think that we'll have a nice discussion this evening. A little background music. Yeah, that's kind of fit for the front porch, isn't it? I had some... listen, instead of me sitting here and yammerizing, there was somebody on the line immediately. Must have been real burned up. Hey, welcome to the program. Who've I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan. How are you, dear?
I have to sit funny because of that knife in my back.
Yeah, I know. Hey, if you can pull back a little bit on your on your volume, that'd be real nice. You're a little hot.
Sure. That better?
We'll get by, I reckon.
Okay, how about that?
A little more, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Okay, much better, much better. Thank you. So, we're all sprouting that knife, and that was one of the things I had on the list. Any particular observations about having a knife sunk in your back by our party, the people we put in power? And just for clarity's sake, which knife are you talking about? One could argue there's a butcher block set in our back, so, you know, be clear.
Yeah. Well, this is the one that was put there by Senator Reed because he's planning on, little background. The people in this country called, wrote, big effort, and everybody thought, hey, cool deal. The Senate Judiciary passed a bill that did not include retroactive immunity on the telecoms.
Right, for spying on us.
Right. And everybody thought, great, okay, we're cool. Harry Reid, our very own Senate Majority Leader, our very own Dino, is using procedural moves to not only bring out the bill with immunity, but he's also using it to ignore Senator Dodd's hold on that particular bill.
Right, so because, you know, it... Dodd has a hold on that one, so we'll just use a different one. We'll do an end run, in other words.
No, he had a hold on the immunity bill, on the on the bill that had the...
That had no immunity in it. Right.
Yeah. So that's the one he's going to bring out, even though it's got a hold on it. He's going to ignore it anyway.
Wow, I thought I read it differently than you. You've probably had a little more time with it than I have. I thought Reed had pulled a complete end run with a different piece of legislation. Maybe I misread it.
Okay, it says the goodie I got. It says, however, media reports indicate that Senator Reed will not honor Senator Dodd's hold. That's where we come in, and we have to act that. The vote could happen in the next several hours.
Okay. What I've got here is just Reed is using procedural tricks to make your work irrelevant by bringing the Intelligence Committee's version of the same bill to the Senate floor instead. What's the big difference? This version of the bill includes retroactive immunity.
Right. There were two bills. The first one, the one that was originally put into, passed through judiciary, was the one without immunity. He's going to bring to the floor the one with immunity, and that one has the hold on it.
Okay, it's beginning to make a little bit of sense to me now. Well, look, get used to it, Susan, okay? Get used to it. That feeling of the knife going in, because, you know, it's not even subtle anymore. You know, the really good politicians can have the shiv all the way between your ribs and into your chest cavity before you know that you've been touched. These guys so thoroughly take decent, hardworking, middle-class Americans for granted that they're using blunt instruments now.
Okay, I suggest we do something. I suggest that, okay, we can't do anything right now. That's a given. Because we have to get back the White House, among other things.
Well, did you hear Did you hear Scott's call last night?
Yeah.
And his conversation regarding the fact that he wants to see the Democratic Party utterly broken so that we can rebuild it?
Okay, here's what I was thinking about in regards to that. And this is taking a page right out of the Republican base's playbook. We get the power back, and then the base bloody well purges the party.
Okay. And it's one thing to say it. It's another to have a plan to do it. And it's another thing altogether.
Okay, that's why I'm saying it now, because we have to start planning it.
I think about this stuff all the time, Susan. Are you ready for the consequences of it?
Do you mean the lack of seniority?
No. No, I mean, are you ready to have a 9-0 majority on the Supreme Court that will be that way for the next 50 years?
No. That's not what I'm talking about.
Are you ready for every right-wing piece of garbage that the religion industry?
That's not what I'm talking about.
But it may not be what you're talking about, Susan, but it's what you're going to get.
If you put a Democrat in the White House, and you have a large majority in both houses, then the base, on a piecemeal basis, goes through and say Harry Reid comes up for election. Fine, he suddenly finds out he ain't got any support, and he has a primary challenger that knocks him off, a Democrat that wins his seat.
That's good. It's good in theory, and I welcome other people's opinions. It's Front Porch Friday, after all. It's good in theory, but making it so in fact is a different animal, because these are all state races, and where the House is concerned, they're district races. Are we going to? And I'm asking about the logistics of it. Are we all just going to collectively move into the district where we want to get rid of the SOBs?
No. What we're going to have to do is the people in those districts are going to have to get off their butts and organize. And the money is going to have to come from all over the country.
There are districts
in
this...
I'm already sending what little money I have to old people like Cindy Sheehan, because I want to support her candidacy, to other candidates. It's not much. It's a couple bucks, but hey.
Yeah. But still, Susan, what I'm getting at, I mean, there are districts. There's a district somewhere in Iowa that thinks that Steve King is just the best congressman they could possibly have.
I know.
There's a district in Georgia that thinks Jack Gingrey, that there's no better in America.
Well, I realize that.
I mean, you want to get somebody off their butts? I mean, let's see. Alabama's 5th congressional district is represented by Bud Kramer. Bud Kramer represents NASA, the military, and all the jobs that have been brought to North Alabama by, those government contracts. People like having those jobs. You know what I mean?
You can only do so much, but you can also do a great deal. And you can put the fear of God into quite a few people that way. That way you're not taking apart the entire party, but you are throwing a hell of a scare into the people that are still left.
And what happens when they survive the scare?
Then maybe they start acting.
I mean, they ached. The Democratic Party ached to get back into power since 1994. We gave it to them. What have they given us?
Not much.
Nothing.
Not much,
Susan. Nothing. They've given us nothing. The war is still going on. Mothers are still weeping at the sight of an officer in a dress uniform on her front porch. People are still dying in the occupation in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're still talking about the imminent danger posed by Iran, regardless of the facts that exist that we know to exist. The housing bubble has burst. America is coming apart at the seams.
Yes, I know that. Can I inject a bright note, a little bit of hope?
You can try. I'm a little past it right now, I think.
Okay. Some people wrote an op-ed piece. They were Representatives Wexler, Gutierrez, and Baldwin, all of the House Judiciary Committee. The papers wouldn't print it.
Is this the one about impeachment?
Yep. Now, they have set up a website. There is, I put part of that op-ed up on our website on headonradio.com.
Mm-hmm.
And a link to the website where you can go to demand impeachment. Actually, it's not demand impeachment, demand hearings. Because once you get hearings, the whole house of cards is going to come down.
Do you believe that? I don't believe it anymore. I mean, if you look at everything that the House has turned a blind eye to and wimped out over, then how can you say that anything will bring the House of Cards down? We are in a... Susan, it's a leadership vacuum. That's all it is. We have no leadership. Nancy Pelosi is not a leader. Steny Hoyer is not a leader. Harry Reid is not a leader. Apparently, any leadership I still kind of reserve judgment on Dick Durbin of Illinois. He shows occasional bouts of courage. But, I mentioned a few nights ago the concept of hunker down. And I think that's where we are. Hunker down and hope that we can survive until January the 20th, 2009. And by God, you know what? I've also come to the conclusion that that's where our democratic representation wants us to be. Because they want us to buy into the myth. They want us to buy into the fraud that there's nothing they can do because those mean old Republicans are stopping them. But you know what?
Well,
all they had to do was look at George Bush and say, you know, fine, you want to veto these things? How many bills do we have to send you to get vetoed? We've done our best. We're not sending you any more bills. Just stop it.
There's at least three that aren't.
Out of how many?
Hey, it's three is better than none.
No, three is none, Susan.
You have to start somewhere, Bob.
They're
demanding.
They're not. I applaud what Wexler has said. I applaud. You know the regard that I hold Dennis Kucinich in. But you know what? It's not the kind of a body where two people can get something done, especially when the people have the power won't let them do much more than breathe. I mean, I'm glad this stuff's out there. I'm glad Wexler's talking about it. And I'm not going to quit talking about it. I will go if I go down, I will go down swinging. But you know what? We're going to go down. A conscious decision has been made by the Nancy Pelosi's and the Harry Reid's and that crowd that they would rather try to consolidate political power in 2008 than actually honor their constitutional oath.
Well, in that case, we're done. You may as well stick a fork in us.
Well, I'm afraid we are, because we can't afford the luxury of time. We're going to get our economy is going to be broken over this occupation. I mean, you realize that, right?
Yeah. Why do you think I've been stockpiling food?
Well, you know, not a bad idea.
And people, if you're smart, come spring, dig up your yard and start planting food.
I don't disagree. But you know, but I mean. I have called, and look, you know, who am I talking to? You have dialed till you got calluses on your fingers.
Yeah.
You've written.
I will.
You've emailed. And you'll continue to do so. But you know what? Today, and why should I say that today shows us anything? Everything has shown us something. Early on, I said, well, you know, they're just getting their feet under them. They need a little time. You know, you can't expect them to do everything at once. And they didn't do anything. And again, and you know, I mean, they've sent the right bills up. Let's not. They've sent some of the right bills up, but I don't. George Bush, I mean, it's like he's got a file with the dirty, naked photos with Nancy Pelosi and a horse or something. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know what he's got on him.
Yeah.
He's got the pictures of Harry Reid and a dead boy, or.
I don't know why they're doing that. I really, really don't. Did you see the thing on? Oh, that's right. You don't have Oberman.
No, I don't.
Guess who profited by the illegal spying?
Who?
On the U.S. citizens.
The telecoms?
No, besides the telecoms, Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, God. Well, Susan, I wonder if maybe I should have done a rerun tonight.
How about that one?
Honest to God, I wonder if I should have done a rerun tonight. I mean, it's been...
Well, look at it this way. After the day's over, then you can just go get the nice brown liquid and proceed to...
Because I got a big day tomorrow, and I got to travel and stuff, so no, there's not going to be any let up there. I don't know. Maybe I should have taken it as a sign when the news wouldn't play. No, I mean, that's... But you see, that's the point. That's one. You know, that's one of the knives. There's more knives. I look like we look like a daggum pincushion right now. Let's see. Yeah, you got Harry Reid doing what Harry Reid does best. Let's see. How about... How about the funding of the occupation? You know, we caved on that too.
Yeah. You know, I don't think it would bother me so much if it was the Republicans that had been doing this. I expect it from Republicans. That's what they do.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If it was the Republicans doing this, we could say, you know, they're slimy, sleazy, warmongering, bloodthirsty, the vampiric monsters.
Yeah. Well, it's like when I called Reid's office, I told them, hey, you do this. You move, as far as I'm concerned, from the Democratic column to the Republican column.
How'd they take that?
Well, I'll inform the senator of your opposition. In other words, they're going to run file.
Well, what do they do? I mean, are they... See what this does to me? Are these people in Washington, D.C. absolutely immunized from understanding what it is that the American people want? We're told that they're so sensitive to polls. Look at the damn polls.
Yeah. You know, I think the longer this goes on, the more I think absolute term limits are the answer. Power corrupts. If you're not in there long enough to amass any power...
I'm informed that Senator Dodd now says he will filibuster.
God bless you, Senator Dodd.
Yeah. I'm being told by a listener that he's kind of at sea on what we're talking about. Maybe you and I just sort of jumped into it so fast that it's not entirely clear. Senator Dodd had placed a hold on the bill that would have granted immunity to the telecoms for their part in spying on the American people. Harry Reid has said that he will bring it to the floor anyway. Directly in contravention of the wishes and the protocols and the ancient rules of civility that apply in the Senate. It is a knife in the back. And you know, it's not just some little thing. It's not like it's a bill to put a life-saving stoplight at the intersection of 3rd and Main where there's been a lot of wrecks and a lot of fatalities.
Yeah.
This is something that affects every single American who picks up a telephone.
Exactly.
Who uses email. Who communicates electronically in any form. And Harry Reid says he wants Harry Reid wants the telecommunications companies to be immune from being sued for their illegal, unconstitutional conduct. God Almighty. I'm just...
Anybody in Nevada want to run for Reed's chair?
Maybe Jack Carter will. You know, Jimmy's son. He ran against that right-wing freak that they've got. Of course, he got beat. But Harry Reid, as the Senate Majority Leader, has enough money to buy God. The only people who can beat Harry Reid would be, you know, a full court press, White House coordinated campaign to oust him, like they ran against
Daschle.
Yeah, against Tom Daschle, who now looks like an absolute paragon of senatorial virtue.
Yeah, that's the truth. I got to tell you, in that case, and this sounds awful, pray for a blood clot, people.
Oh, that's just wicked. But
sorry.
No,
it's reality.
Well, you know, or
it's like it.
Or maybe George, maybe, I don't know, maybe George isn't a man of honor and he'll release the pictures of Harry with the dead boy anyway.
Yeah, it's like those, that website that says, it's been X number of days since 2001. No, it's been X number of days since...
Cheney's last heart attack, please send bacon. Yeah, the boys at WD-40 used to have that up there. It may be a long night here. It may be a very long night, Susan, because I should pay attention to the little voices in my head from time to time. You know, not the ones that are telling me to climb the...
Look at it this way.
I should have taken the night off. I should have just taken the damn night off.
Look at it this way. We have each other.
Yeah, and the each other that we have can place phone calls to each other that the telecoms can listen in on. See, that's what pisses me off so much, because they're not... It's the fact that in order to listen to some, they have to listen to all.
Exactly.
I understand systems theory enough to understand that.
Yeah, Agent Fred, you know what you can do with your phone calls? Anthrax, Space Needle, St. Louis Arch.
Tidal charts.
That ought to be enough to get me flagged for today at any rate.
Yeah. Special fudge. Special fudge on sale in Dallas. The rain in Maine falls mainly... You get the idea.
We're just evil.
Susan, I'll talk to you later. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be such a damn wet blanket.
Well, I'm a downer, too, so hopefully we can talk to somebody who's more cheery.
Well, the thing is, the way things are going, whoever I hear from that's cheery, I'm going to wonder what the hell's wrong with them.
Either that or ask them, whatever you're on, can you send it to
me? I mean, did they do this so late in the day on Friday thinking we wouldn't notice that we'd all be loaded by now?
Probably. You know, the Friday news dump.
I mean, and see, that's the thing. I expect that of the Bush administration. I want better from my party.
So do I.
And we deserve better.
Exactly.
All those little lurch noises, you know? Just makes me crazy.
Well,
thanks, Susan. Thanks for getting me started.
Pour yourself a drink.
Oh, not till this and Strictly Confidential are over. I've made a vow. I will not do impaired radio. Sometimes it's hard to keep that vow, but I'm damn sure going to try.
Love to Agnes and the kids.
All right. Thanks so much. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It is Front Porch Friday, so anything that's on your mind, you're welcome to bring to the table. And anything that you want to talk about, and any group of people that we have an opportunity to put together, we will. But I warn you, I'm not in a good frame of mind. Maybe this is one of those things where you take the advice of the universe when it's saying, take the night off, Bob, take the night off, Bob, take the night off. But no, I didn't. I'm here, and we've got to get through it. I don't walk off. It's Front Porch Friday on the horn. Your liberal voice, the one that you make go. I'm Bob Kincaid. If that won't perk you up, nothing will. Yeah, boy. I hope that perked you up, because it didn't perk me up. I'm still monumentally pissed off. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is they're going to drive, between the Republicans and the Dinos, they're going to drive this bus right over the cliff. I mean, they're down in they're down in the hold of our ship of state, deliberately holding the hull. And all I can say is at least I feel terribly normal over this because I am righteously pissed. Hey, Jim, what's happening?
Well, I don't know, but what's gotten to be in your body tonight?
Well, as Susan put it, I'm just tired. I'm tired of sprouting daggers out of my back.
Well, I don't see how you do it night after night, Bob. I really don't. I mean, dealing with nothing but negative stuff and not having anything good to say about anything. I don't know.
Oh, wait a minute, Jim. I've got lots of good to say about lots of people, and I do it frequently.
Well, I mean, you know, basically, that's just my impression sometimes. But, I mean, you know, that's just the way I feel. But I'll say this, and it's good advice. You shouldn't say anything on the telephone that you're not prepared to hear played back to you in court.
Well, that's well and good, but I should be able to say over the telephone, well, let's put it this way. Let's say I'm talking with my grandmother about my great-grandfather's proclivities for or taste for hard liquor, moonshine maybe even.
Mm-hmm.
How is that anybody's business? But me and Grant.
Well, I imagine it might be the ATF business if they should realize that there's illegal distilling.
I said my great-grandfather and his proclivity, not his brewing thereof, just his taste for. How's that anybody's business?
I don't know. Any overzealous agent knowing that there's a willing customer out there for moonshine might be wanting to follow you up and see where you might get it.
Okay, so I'm talking to Aunt Mabel on the phone about the fact that Uncle Harry's diabetes is going to kill him if he don't lay off the coconut cake. How is that the government's any damn business?
Well, they're not going to bother with that, Bob. They're...
But if you're going to, in order to listen to some, you must listen to all.
Well,
and that's the problem.
Well, their system is triggered to have computers to pick out certain words in your conversation.
So you're okay with all of this?
Sure. Absolutely.
You're okay with the government spying on you.
Absolutely. I've had to live that way all my life, Mr. Kincaid.
And just because you've had to live your life that way means it's okay to violate the constitutional rights of the rest of the nation, Jim?
I didn't say that. I just said that I learned to live with it, okay?
Well, I'm kind of sorry.
You know, I've learned to live with things like diabetes and cancer and stuff like that. I don't like it, but, you know, I do.
Well, somehow or another, diabetes and cancer, Jim, are a little bit different than having the federal government spy on you in abject violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, I would say that diabetes and cancer are much more serious.
They're certainly more personal.
But I'm just trying to say, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say, my friend, is that, you know, you have your agenda and they have theirs. I have my agenda, they have theirs, and mainly... my agenda has had to be, for most of my life, their agenda.
And well, I understand it. I'm just being honest with you, Jim. My only agenda is the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the United States, the Fourth Amendment thereof, says that the people of the United States shall be secure in their persons, papers, and effects. No warrant shall issue but upon probable cause.
Yeah, but look historically.
What probable cause does the Bush administration have to listen in on every blessed phone call in the United States? It's a simple enough inquiry.
Any calls they want to, because it can be interpreted by their own judicial people. You know how interpretation is.
So in other words, you're saying that we're living in a dictatorship and the Constitution is a fraud.
Well, basically what I'm saying is that sed lex, dura lex, the law is latex.
Well, that's a nice little aphorism, but we have to take a hard look at what this nation is and is willing to be. And either the Constitution means something, or, as George Bush puts it, it's just a GD piece of paper.
Well, looking at it from a historical standpoint, Bob, there have been many constitutions written that have been changed, abrogated, and tossed into the dustbin of history. I mean, there's nothing about our Constitution that says it's going to endure. Is there?
Only the will of the people, Jim. Only the will of the people. And as long as
endure?
Only the will of the people can make the Constitution endure, Jim. And if the people say, you know, screw it, the telecoms have the right to spy on the people of the United States willy-nilly, then you're right. This Constitution will go into the dustbin of history, too. But every 4th of July, we'll talk about how noble Jefferson and Adams and Franklin and Washington were, and we'll feel all hunky-dory about things at the same time that the federal government has become basically a tyranny.
I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of historical inevitability. that everything is in a state of flux. Everything is changing.
So it was
not always for the good either.
So it was inevitable.
That's all I'm just saying. I'm being
I know, and I'm trying. You're saying what you're saying, and I'm trying to find out what you're saying means. And it sounds.
I think it's pretty obvious what I'm saying means. That one day this Constitution that we have just might be supplanted by something else.
Well, see, I don't think it'll be supplanted. I think we will go on maintaining the fiction that the Constitution still applies, and we'll leave it there because, you know, to actually say, you know, hey, we're going to replace it would actually cause real angst and real fury among the people who think it still exists.
All right, let me ask you this. How many people did that with the Weimar Constitution in 1932?
What do you mean?
How many people refused to accept the changes to the Weimar Constitution in 1932?
Obviously not enough, and the ones who did wound up in camps.
Well, not all of them did. A lot of them just became...
Well, or they became good little Nazis.
You know, all those Germans over there say, oh, I wasn't a Nazi. Well, I don't believe that because most of them were. Their allegiance changed. I'm playing the devil's advocate here, and I'm not trying to piss you off.
You're not pissing me off. You're kind of scaring me, Jim, because
there's
a lot of people out there that are far less knowledgeable than you, who will, you know, as long as they don't come and take away the boat and the new truck, would be happy under a fascist dictatorship, the dictatorship of the proletariat, an anarcho-syndicalist commune, or
exactly
a democracy.
And it could happen. I've said that for the past, ever since we've been talking on the telephone. I've never deviated from that point. That everything is in a state of flux and things can change and not for the good. And constitutions can be changed. They can be legislated out of existence. And the will of the people can be willy-dilly. It can be easily swayed by a number
and it can,
of outside
and it can,
influence.
It can be thwarted at the drop of a hat.
Well, I'm not going to even get thwarted, if you want to use that term. Yes, thwarted, or it could be...
I mean, I don't know
it
what...
It could
I don't,
be out of necessity. I don't know.
I don't know what was on your ballot in 2006, but... And frankly, here in West Virginia, I didn't have much of a chance to do anything about it. I got a Democratic congressman and a couple of Democratic senators. But all over the country, we rooted for people to put Democrats in power to try to check the abuses of the Bush administration. And I think maybe this is the ground level of what's really under my saddle.
I would say so, it is.
And that is that we...
They have not done what you wanted them to do.
We made a bargain with them. We made a bargain. The people of the United States, by a majority, made a bargain with the Congress. We told them that we would return them from the wilderness in exchange for a pretty clear agenda.
But I don't know how clearly they understood the terms of that bargain. I'm talking about the people in Washington, D.C., as opposed to some of the people who voted for them.
Are they morons?
No, they're not morons. They're extremely capable people in many cases, and they're very cunning, and they're very, very wily.
So in other words, we made this bargain with them, and they had their fingers crossed.
There's always possibility of that. You know, it's kind of like that governor in the best little whorehouse in Texas. Remember him?
Oh, sure.
And what did I say about politicians last night? When they're not kissing babies, they're stealing their lollipops.
Yeah.
You know, that's just what I'm trying to say, my friend. I mean, listen, don't be surprised at anything that happens. I mean, you know, it's going to be it's like Betty Davis said, hang on, it's going to be a bumpy night.
I've got an email that just rolled in from our listener, Marty, and he just says, so is Jim saying that we should just shut up, bend over, and take it?
I have no reply to that.
I mean, if you can't change it, and this really is the ultimate inquiry. If you can't change it, do you just go along and get along?
Well, sometimes you have to. You know, you've heard about the oak and the reed, and the oak and the wind and the reed. The mighty oak stands against the wind, but it's blown over. But what happens to the reed? When the wind ceases, the reed stands back up.
Yeah,
that's
but
what I'm saying.
But oaks live for 300 years, and reeds rot with the falling rain.
Activity. We're talking about the ability to withstand the tides of misfortune that blow. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about longevity in trees and reeds.
But I don't think what I'm getting at is I don't think that's what I meant. I don't think that applies in this particular instance. We're not talking about the transient shifts, the fickle shifts of fate. We're talking about clearly defined issues of right and wrong.
Well, it's not that black and white, Mr. Bob. It isn't. I mean, you say everything's black or white. Goethe said life was green. I don't know what color it is sometimes. I really don't.
I mean, do you really? I mean, are you telling me, Jim, that you think that that the occupation of Iraq, when these people clearly, I mean, they've put forward bills, you know, that's what gets so frustrating. They've put forward bills demanding a timetable for the withdrawal of troops.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Bush has vetoed them, or the Republicans in the Senate have threatened to filibuster, at which point, you know, Harry Reid filled his shorts. They've made token attempts at doing the right thing, but then they turn around and they cave.
Well, they use the framework of what doctrine under which to operate, the Constitution.
Right, and the Constitution says that the House has the power of the purse. And the Constitution does not mandate that a bill be sent forward for the Iraq War. If they really want to end it, they can end it.
Well, apparently they don't want to end it well enough.
If Bush overrides their veto,
then constitutionally he can do that, can he not?
But, Jim, he can't veto something that doesn't get to him.
Well, then it just dies right in committee.
Right.
And that's what's happened.
No. I'm talking about the funding of the war. We have sent bill after bill to Bush, which he has vetoed. He has done 7 vetoes in 7 years, and 6 of them in the last one. Okay.
Well, what it takes then, they have to come
at that
back
at that
and
at, no at that point Nancy Pelosi and at that point if Nancy Pelosi had any morals or any courage, she would say to him, "Listen, we've sent you bills. We're not sending you any more. We've got more work to do."
Well,
getting the troops home as best you can.
Well, he could still continue to operate under executive authority.
No, he can't appropriate money with an executive order. He would have to declare martial law in order to do something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure that all his possibilities have been explored by his minions about what he could do. But I mean, if he vetoes a bill, then it's going to have to come back through Congress and be passed again to override that veto. By 67%.
But you're missing the point, Jim. Congress has no obligation to send him another one. They are not constitutionally obligated to cave in like
and
they
he
do.
He has no obligation to sign what they send him. And there's a
that's what I'm trying to get through to you, Jim. Don't send him anymore. Don't send him anything else.
Well,
he can't print his own money.
Well. All right, I would like to see what would happen if they didn't send him anymore and just see exactly what he would do. I think you'd be surprised.
Oh, I think he would gladly leave the troops in Iraq and hope and sit there every day and pray that they starve to death, and so that he could then blame the Congress.
That is a possibility, and they realize
it. And they are so craven and so utterly yellow from rib side to rib side that they don't have any idea of how to deal with it.
Well, can't you see that that's his ace in the hole over them? He's saying, you know, I can't do anything. They're the ones who won't send me a bill so I can do something with it and blame them. And that's what will happen to them.
And somebody with some courage, I mean, you know, I'm not talking about Nancy Pelosi, could stand up and say, we sent him bills, and he vetoed them.
Well, I mean, I'm sure she could probably say that right now, couldn't she?
No, because she's caved.
She hasn't sent him any bills for veto?
No. She's already caved. As of today, Jim, we've provided the money that George Bush demanded with no strings attached whatsoever, so he can continue his occupation and hang the occupation on whoever the next president is.
Well, looking at it somewhat optimistically, I understand that Mr. Murtha came back recently and said that things have improved somewhat. that even the surge had had somewhat of a positive effect. So now that we've been there since, when, 2003?
Yeah, we've been there longer than we've been in the Second World War.
All right, we've been there a long time. Well, there's nothing we can do about it. Like I said last night, the moving finger right, the pen writes and having it move on. And nothing you can do about it. They cancel half a line. Well, the only thing we can do is to turn that country back over to its owners and peacefully and slowly and gradually remove our troops from there.
But you see, George Bush has no intention of doing any of that.
Well, George Bush may not have anything to do with it, Bob. He leaves in January. And that's where there is some light at the end of the tunnel here. It might not be today the way you'd like to have it happen, but it will happen. We're not going to be there forever.
I don't know that.
I
know that if a Republican is elected, the troops will remain there for as long as that Republican is in office. I know that for a fact.
You don't know that either. Look at when the Republican Nixon was elected. I mean, and Ford was elected. We got out of there then.
In 1968, Nixon said he had a secret plan to win the war, and then in 1972, he said he wouldn't tell us unless we reelected him.
Well, eventually, though, we did leave. We did leave.
Yeah. From 1968 to 1970, what? Four, three.
1963.
From 1960, from January 1969, when Richard Nixon took office on a promise to end the war, to when the war actually ended. How many names on that wall do you think that constitutes?
I don't know. You tell me. You're probably more capable of telling me than I am. Well, of the fatalities, I would say probably. I don't know how many names doubled, or if it went by one and a half or a half, or I don't know. But it was a matter of we were involved in that country. We should never have been. It was a terrible mistake, and we should have learned our lesson then.
And now we're involved in another pathetic little country that we never should have been involved in, and we're going to wind up with another damn memorial on the mall.
Afghanistan became their Vietnam. And all the while when we were in Vietnam, they were laughing at us. And we just got out of there in 1975, and what did they do in 1979? They committed the same mistake we did by going into Afghanistan, correct? And how long were they there? 10 years.
Yeah. And so, therefore, we're going to repeat that one.
And it was one of the principal downfalls of the Soviet system. Of those boys being there, those Russian boys being in those Afghan mountains.
Just as this may be the downfall of us.
Well, I don't necessarily downfall. This could be a transition. I just look at things as transition, not downfalls and things of that nature. I guess we have a different type of nomenclature that we apply or a noun naming system. I don't know.
Well, I tell you what, we don't have the economy to let this go on indefinitely.
Well, no, I don't think any nation does.
The markets this week just absolutely got hammered on.
Yeah, what did it drop today?
I don't know. I don't know what the final number was, but the week itself.
Yesterday was 193 points on the Dow Jones.
But
obviously something's going to have to happen, and those things can make Republicans sit up and take notice.
They finished on the downside. They finished on the downside today, based on a spike in consumer inflation.
Okay.
And people are beginning to wonder how much more weasel room the Fed has for continuing to cut interest rates without just having inflation run the hell away.
Well, they dropped it what 1/4% yesterday. Or day four?
Yeah, another quarter.
Okay. So how much have they dropped it in the past 6 months? 2%?
In the past 6 months? I don't think it's at two. Most of their meetings have been quarter point drops.
Okay. All right. I say 1.75, maybe. That's not that much. Really, it's not in the whole scheme of things. But I do believe things are going to get better if they have to. And, I'm much more optimistic about things. They, a lot of times, Bob, things don't happen when I want them to happen. but they all come to those who wait. It's a will of, you know, it's a question of patience. He wins who waits.
I know, and if you sit by the river long enough, the body of your enemy will float by.
Yeah, it's true.
But I'm not thinking about who's sitting. I'm not thinking about sitting by the side of the river. I'm thinking about the real world costs of this in flesh and blood.
Okay.
To the mothers and brothers and sisters and husbands and wives, fathers, all over this country, who can wait till hell freezes over, but it's not gonna make their family any less shattered for the young man or young woman who comes home to Dover and didn't have to die that way.
Well, I agree with you, but that is unfortunate. But into the power.
Well, see, that's the difference between you and me. It's a nomenclature thing. You think it's unfortunate. I think it's a damn crime.
It is unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. But to the powers that be, it is regrettable. But it is acceptable.
Yeah, it's acceptable to them. Acceptable losses.
I'm just being honest with you here. I'm not trying to be.
I understand where you're coming from. I don't necessarily agree, but I understand.
I guess I've just been around this sort of thing so long that this is business as usual, almost to me.
Yeah, well, I can understand that, Jim.
Unless the very stones cry out against what I've just said, I'm sorry, but that's just the way I perceive it, and that's not right.
Well, certainly it is. No one's assailing that.
All right. Well, listen. I hope you have a good night and a good show.
Thank you, and you have a good weekend. We'll talk soon.
And how is your lovely wife?
Still dealing with the lumbago.
Well, please.
She's not terribly mobile, but she's doing the best she can.
Well, I wish you and your family a blessed holiday, a gracious Christmas, and a better New Year.
Thank you, Jim, and you take care. All right.
All right. You take care of yourself.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
Let's keep it rolling because I'll tell you a little secret. The problem I had with the news at the top of the first hour is apparently the problem I'm going to have with the news for the rest of the night. Peter Godbold, be forewarned. Hi, who have I got?
You got me, Bob.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay, I guess. Getting a little lazy in my old age. And a little cranky, too, because I'm sorry, my son. I cannot suffer a fool. I cannot suffer a fool. And there are times when a man has to just speak his mind. And I am sick and tired of suffering fools. People that think it's okay to think of those numbers. Yeah, you know, hey, Nixon came in, he had a secret plan, he was going to get us out of the NAM, right?
Yeah.
And, hey, how many of those people that voted for Nixon went to the NAM? Not very GD many of them.
Well, you know, I mentioned last night that the night before I sat and watched that Republican dog and pony show, and every time they showed Mitt Romney, I kept having this mental image of him bicycling all over the south of France, trying to convert people to Mormonism instead of dealing with his obligation to his country. And then there's more evidence, there's more interest or information out, Bob, about good old Tom Tancredo. You remember, you know who he is.
Oh yeah.
He's the racist freak that who said the first act that he would do as president would be to release two rogue cops who shot a guy in the back.
I know. And the thing is,
well, it turns out Tom Tancredo sits in the basement of his home in Colorado and watches old John Wayne war movies with his pals.
Okay.
And what's more, it also turns out, and you probably remember these classifications. I don't know anything about them because they predate me in a big way. Tom Tancredo was 1A.
Oh, okay. 1A, that means you're draftable.
And fresh out of deferments and ready to rock. Well.
But if he was 1A, he was draftable, Bob.
You're darn right he was. That's why he went to his draft board and said he was crazy as a loon, had suffered from panic disorders and depression, and had been on depression medications, and before you knew it, he was 1Y.
Mm-hmm. Of course. That's the cowardice of the Republican Party. But, hey, let's not talk about the Republican Party. Let's talk about what's happened just today and yesterday and the day before that, okay?
Yeah.
How many times are we going to just, you know, stand and let the wind blow over us and break us like the mighty oak, or bend like the little reeds that we're supposed to be, before we realize that we're neither. We're not a tree and we're not reeds. We're human beings, Bob. And those boys and girls that are being slaughtered in the name, your name and my name, the United States of America and the citizens thereof, come home in boxes, Bob. In boxes draping the flag that you wave so proudly, you Republicans. You wave it so proudly and you wrap yourselves in it and you call yourselves patriots. But you're nothing of the kind. You're cowards. You're punks. You're weaklings. You have no courage. You're neither a reed nor are you a mighty oak.
But God forbid a Democrat should say something like that on the floor of the Senate. No sooner were the words out of his mouth then Nancy Pelosi would twist the thumb screws and make him apologize for being mean to Republicans. Remember that? Remember what Pete Stark said on the floor?
I know. I am sick to death of Nancy Pelosi and Baba Wawa or whatever. I'm sick to death of the pundits and the skunks, the punks, and the weaklings that stand and call themselves Americans. They stand before the flag, but they don't stand before the guns like our boys, our sons, and our daughters do in Iraq. They don't stand on that street corner where that IED is planted and have their body shattered into little red mist. They don't stand there and stand that duty. All they can do is, you know, call up and talk about all the things that they believe we should do. We should just forget about it. It'll go away. It's not going to go away, Bob. We have to do something about it. We have to do it now. If we don't call, or if we don't write, if we just sit on our duffs and do nothing, it's going to roll over us like that storm, and it'll snap us. Even the little reeds will be flattened against the ground when the mighty Republican Party stomps you to the ground. It doesn't matter. It's not a win. It is an idea that they have planted in your brain that you cannot stand up against them. They're better than you are. They're not better than you, Bob. They're not better than I, nor any of us. They're not better than us.
No, Bob. Let's take a little moment here while I've got you on the line. I don't guess you got to listen to John Fox late last night, but Billy Shears with his music segment that he does on John's show every Thursday night introed a new song that was written by Billy Joel and performed by a young man named Cass Dillon, and it's a real wow. Let's take a minute. Let me roll that because I think you're gonna dig hearing this, Bob. All right, stand by. Here we go. This is Christmas in Fallujah by Cass Dillon, written by Billy Joel, and backed by Billy's band and produced that way, too. Christmas in Fallujah.
It's evening in the desert. I'm tired and I'm cold. But I am just a soldier. Do what I am told. We came with the Crusaders to save the Holy Land. It's Christmas in Fallujah, and no one gives a damn. And I just got your letter, and
You know, the amazing thing about that tune is, you still with me there, Bob?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
The amazing thing about that is that Billy Joel didn't just sit down at the piano and, you know, with his little lyric writing book next to him and make up some junk about the Iraq War.
No.
That's based on correspondence that he's received from any number of soldiers serving over there.
Yeah, that's what we, the people of the United States, need to hear. We need to hear what they feel, not what you think you want them to feel. See, that's the difference, Bob. You think a lot of things, and people think, you know, they're being patriotic by listening to the rhetoric of these politicians and doing their duty by whatever, buying the gas and going to Walmart and getting their Christmas lights up and being good citizens, right? Well, they're not doing anything other than following this evil triad. That's the only way I can look at it, you know, because you've got the industrial base, and you've got this military base, and then you've got the political base. Okay, those are the three pillars that we found this nation on. We don't found it on liberty, justice, and truth. No, we found it on industrial power and military power and political whatever. I can't even think of it as anything other than evil. Political evil. That's all this country goes for. And then you've got this, I was just watching the wife, Linda was in the kitchen. She was watching the news, and I went out there for a moment, and it's got this thing on there about steroid use, and the baseball players, they're all using steroids. And I thought, my God, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's sort of like, well, bust my buttons.
Yeah, okay, the steroid use of the baseball players. Well, look at you've got the NFL, and you've got these great big guys in the, what is this world wrestling thing that they get into, and they're all doped up on something, Bob.
Yeah, sure.
Let's get real. They're pumping their, you know, human beings don't grow that huge unless you put something in them to make them grow up to be like.
No, No, you don't. You don't. You don't bat 224 playing shortstop in the majors 1 year with maybe 11 home runs and come back next year looking like Charles Atlas, and you know belt 55 out of the park and bat 302.
Front, Bob.
Huh?
These are steroids. No, this is things. These are things that the Nazis did with their children. Look at Arnie Schwarzenegger.
Well, these are things that the that the East Germans did with their Olympic squads, sure.
Absolutely.
But I think I know what you're talking about. I think I know where you're going, because the fact is, you know, you turn on the news and oh, the crisis in baseball, blah 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 blah, blah, and you want screw baseball. I mean,
yeah,
I love a baseball game as much as the next guy. Screw baseball.
Afghanistan. Let's get back to this. War. It is not a war, Bob.
Yeah, you want to take a shiny thing and just wave it at the news anchor and go, hey, shiny thing, over here, hey, look, yeah, war. We're at war. To hell with the baseball story.
Bob, let's get honest, okay? This is not a war. We are not.
No, it's an occupation, sure. I mean,
war is
shorthand.
We have invaded George W. came right out and said it not too long after we invaded, that the war was over, that we had defeated this terrible...
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended.
Absolutely.
I remember it well.
Yeah, we all do, but everybody gets inundated with this, the war. There is no war. We are not at war with East Asia or whatever it is, you know, in that novel, 1984, we have not always been at war with East Asia or whatever it was, but they keep pumping it into your mind till you think you are at war. Bob, we have not been bombed. We haven't had bombers flying over us like the Luftwaffe flying over Britain, bombing the buildings. We haven't had anything like a war. We never were at war. We invaded a country. We therefore occupied it. We told our people that it was a war so that they would go along in their dumb, happy little ways and go shopping at
and
Walmart.
Put their stupid little yellow ribbon magnet on the back of their gas-guzzling SUV. Oh, yeah, we know the drill. But the question, I suppose, then, and I mean, this started out a conversation, the topic started out on this stupid business of giving the telecoms a free pass for spying on everybody in America. But it has.
They're listening to us right now, then, aren't they?
Sure they are. Well, I mean, we aim for them to. We put this out there, and we tell people it's radio and that you can listen to it if you want to. I know. Listen, I know by virtue of some of the emails we've got. We've got listeners at NSA.
Good for them.
Tuning in every night. You know, I'm hoping we can do some patriotic good, and maybe one of these days they'll look at how evil what they're doing is, and they'll just walk out and say, you know, I can find another job somewhere.
Okay,
I don't have to do this anymore.
There's a simple explanation to this. Let's go back, just back a couple of days, maybe 230 some odd years ago, and ask ourselves why. Why did these colonists, these good and decent, what were they, loyal servants? And loyal servants of the King of England.
Subjects, loyal subjects of the crown.
They take a stand and say, we the people of the United States, okay?
Yeah, have had enough.
Have had enough, yeah. We've had enough of this crap. We've had enough of...
Well, there's a question even beyond that. How long did this nation last without an NSA, Bob? How long did this nation manage to get along without a CIA? How long did this nation get along without an FBI?
Go there. The only thing that brought on this NSA and this CIA was the Nazis in Germany. Okay? Before that, we did not have. We had a secret service that protected the President of the United States.
That grew out of the Pinkerton.
We did not have a Federal Bureau of Investigations, nor did we. We had... Some pencil pushers in Washington that tried to do this, that, and the other, and, you know, indict some people. And we had a fairly well regulated, and I mean fairly well regulated, democratic republic. And it was a democratic republic because there were checks and balances. co-opted government, that is, executive, with the co-opted judicial, and then the, I don't know what they are, they're not even representatives. They're something else, corporate representatives, maybe, but they are not.
I just call them quitters.
They're not representatives of the people. They're representatives of themselves. They represent themselves.
And you know, I've kind of got a sort of a dual list going, Bob. One is the list of good things that they've tried to do and then lost their nerve. But the other is the stuff that is just outright caving in, collaborative. Go along and getting along, and that's Harry Reid bringing this bill out over Dodd's the hold on the bill. That's just collaborating with the enemy.
It's Richard Monty. It's a shell game. Okay, it's the same thing. If you walk up to the, you know, you're just a rube, you're just a guy that walked up to the they got a card game going on the corner and Richard Monty. You know, you're not going to win the king, queen, jack, right, or whatever, joker. You know, and you're going to bet on where the card goes because the guy's shuffling the cards, but it's not fair. The card ain't fair. And liberty, democracy, and freedom are not at your disposal. You're in the fourth right if you don't believe it. Take a look around you. Read your history. See how they brought it down. See how the Nazis came to power in the Third Reich. And now look at how the Nazis have come to power in your fourth right, United States of America, my foot. We are the ununited, disorganized bunch of baboons. We've been taken to the circus, and we're the rubes, Bob. We are the rubes. And if you don't wake up and realize that you have been hoodwinked out of everything that you believe in to hold these truths we hold to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If you cannot grasp that concept and hold it strong in your heart and be willing to die for that concept, then you are an un-American. If you're not willing to,
no, but that's Bob. That's the thing. Nobody's asking anybody to die for anything. You know what I mean? There was a question about national sacrifice a couple of days ago to the Repigs, and oh, we don't need to do no sacrifice. Everything's rosy.
Hold that concept. I didn't say you have to die for.
No. But I mean, we're not even talking in those terms, is what I'm getting at.
But see, that's how I hold these.
And you know what? I share the sentiment. I think you know I do. But unfortunately, in Washington, D.C., we've got a bunch of Democrats who are just sitting there rubbing their little fingers together like Mr. Burns on The Simpsons. Excellent. All we have to do is wait until November and blame it all on Bush. Release the voters. And, you know,
then you've got, what's his name? You had to throw them Simpsons in it, didn't you?
Well, but only because it's applicable, Bob. Only because it's applicable.
Truly, that is that.
We've got go along, get along Democrats sitting in Washington D.C. who don't give a rat's ass about how many more mothers and fathers, sons, brothers, uncles, aunts, cousins, and friends die over there. Because if they, you know, that's okay as long as it winds up being more for power or more power for us. You know, when I was a little kid, we'd be having something for dinner, and I'd say, "Hey, Mom, what's for dinner?" And she'd say, and I'd say, "Well, I don't really like that much." And my dad would holler from the living room, "Goody, more for me." And that's the Congress that we've got right now. We've got the goody, more for me Congress.
That's true, Bob. Hey, Bob, but the thing is, you know, every morning I get up, and I find myself wandering off to the, to the water room, okay, whatever you want to call it, the bathroom.
The WC, sure.
Yeah, the water closet. And you know, and I sit down there and, you know, I relieve myself of all Democrats, all Republicans, and all these, what do you want to call them up there in Washington? I just kind of flush myself. system out, and then I go in the kitchen, have a cup of coffee, and wake up. And that's all I'm asking the United States of America and the people thereof and the people of the earth to wake up. Just dump these things down the commode and flush them. Get rid of them. Just, if you got to wipe it out, start over with a new Continental Congress, then let's do it. I'm sick to death of everybody sitting around whining and crying and saying, oh, gee, I can't do nothing about it. Yes, you can. You can get just as PO'd as I am, okay? And you can stand up and hold it in your heart. You don't have to die for it, but I'm asking you to be willing to die for it, because that's all they got to see in your eyes is that thing that Andrew Jackson had in his eyes when he went out to arrest that ne'er-do-well that the sheriff was too scared of because he had two guns, and Jackson had one, and Jackson stood before him, and he said, son, you're under arrest. And the boy looked up at him. The boy had two guns in his hands, and when he looked into Andrew Jackson's eyes, he wrote it. He said, Hoss, drop them guns. This is what the boy wrote after he said, why did you surrender to Jackson? He says, because I looked him in the eye, and he had shoot in his eye. See? There's a difference. It wasn't that I'm going to shoot you, but by God, if you don't drop them guns, I will shoot you. And that's the difference between I want to shoot you. See, that's I don't want to go out and kill anybody, Bob.
Right.
I don't want
I understand that. I understand that, Bob.
But I am sick to death of these guys that ain't got the gumption to stand in front of a man with two guns, with one gun in your hand, with one shot, look him in the eye and say, I got shoot in my eyes and I'm sick of your going out here and doing the ne'er-do-well things that you've been doing.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bob, to return to our baseball analogy, you've hit one out of the park tonight. You really have.
I've got to
roll on here, but I really, really thank you, and you know, have a wonderful weekend, okay?
Oh, to you, and hey, you tell Agnes to get well and get back on the air, because I ain't never heard a sweeter woman's voice, other than a couple little gals.
So far, she's pretty much in retirement, just because the plan that we've got working, the plan is working out rather well right now, simply because. She went back into the family life simply because the kids needed somebody, some parent there, and it's paying off big time. Good grades. One of them just got admitted to the gifted program.
Well, Can I give a shout out?
Go right ahead.
Nanette, thank you, darling. I love you very much. And Suzanne, I love you just as much. You're one of you's on the West Coast, one of you's on the East Coast.
And just a big old hey to the chat room.
Hey to all you guys in the chat room. But, you know, thank you. I love you much. And guess what? I'm stuck right here in the middle, and Glenn's got me tied down. She's got the key to my heart. But I love you guys desperately.
Take care, Bob.
Be safe. And take care, my friend.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our good friend Bob calling from the, I assume, the frozen wilds of North Dakota. And let's see who's on the phone here. Hey, who have I got?
You sounded like you needed a laugh early, so I called. Called to give you one.
Oh well, thank you. I'll file that away for later use.
Well, if you need another, I could probably work it up again. But I've been laughing all day. I had to find something to take my mind off of all the same stuff you've been eating your liver over. Let's talk about the Libertyville 7, shall we?
Oh, yeah, I kind of brought them up on the horn section last night. Talk about the shortstop who bats 202 and hits four out of the park. The Justice Department's you can't pay for quality like this. This is what happens when you get your lawyers from the Draw Spunky School of Law.
Oh yeah, good old Regent University, I'm sure. Well, did they do all of that? What's this been running for, what, a couple of years from arrest to now? I think it's about that long.
Yeah.
And what would you say, 25 people full-time, maybe 30? At least 25.
No, every bit of it. And not all making right. shabby money.
And I'm guessing out of pocket, let's just make it an easy to follow example. Let's say 25 federal employees and $1 million to do what they did in that courtroom, which was one acquitted. You're not guilty. You may go now. Oh, yeah, you can sit and cry out of relief for a little while, but now the other six, we're going to start it all over again in about 4 weeks. Bob, have you ever, you've got some legal background, have you ever seen a more obvious case of entrapment in your life?
The only one that was interested in doing anything in Chicago was the FBI agent who was paid to suggest it.
Exactly. They went and found themselves seven guys who had anointed number seven as a religious leader, and I'm sorry, none of
yeah, and you know, in between this noise, which somewhere along the way, based on the information you have provided in the past, you may have heard, in between this noise, here, pass it to the left. In between that noise,
right. I'm sorry,
hey, how do you feel about overturning the United States and bombing the Sears Tower? Dude, what?
What is there any money in it? I mean, for those guys to be...
I need some new shoes. Dude, I need some new shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, we got shoes, man. We'll give you shoes. You want a basketball? That's left over from the midnight basketball program of Bill Clinton. We got a bunch of them. You can have a basketball.
I mean, all seven of those guys, for them to be upwardly mobile meant they were going to get off the couch that day. It is just pathetic, and now they're going to start it all over. All right, let's turn this whole thing over. Let's do something like, well, golly, it is Friday. Let's do something like people like you and I would do, sitting on a front porch, armed only with a reasonably good newspaper and said brown jug all over there, you know, close to that second.
Yank that corn cob, dried up corn cob stopper out and take a pull.
All right, we arrest these seven brilliant individuals, and we start this process. Or B, we take those same 25 federal employees, no matter their background, even if it was Regent University, and we say to them, dear federal employee, none of us in this organization, meaning coast to coast, border to border, none of us speak enough Arabic. All of you have just been enrolled in a crash course to speak Arabic. In 2 years' time, you will A, speak Arabic, or B, you won't be an employee. We've got $1 million in a fund that for books, food, any tuition, there it is. At the end of 2 years, if we'd have followed that silly-ass plan, we'd have had, accounting for failures, we'd have had 20 Arabic speakers, and those seven guys would still be on the couch going,
here. Oh, man, harsh.
Really smooth. I hate it when the seeds pop.
Oh, dude, I burnt my shirt.
Oh, God, Mom just bought it yesterday.
How am I going to explain this one?
Yeah, there you go. Gee, nice call.
Thank you.
I'm serious. I'm just laughing. So, and these are the kind of cases that Department of Injustice...
Well, but wait. Let's extrapolate a little bit. Pass the jug back. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. While we're doing this, okay, while the FBI is expending its resources going out and convincing dudes that they want the basketball and the happening kicks and, you know, after they get them, that they want to blow up the Sears Tower,
that they couldn't find the on button for.
I mean, do you remember when Ari Fleischer said we have to be careful what we say because the enemy's listening? Remember that?
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to fight off the bats, you know, but and it may get to where I can't. But just imagine for a moment the response of the deadly in earnest Al Qaeda crowd, because apparently they've got cable in the cave in Pakistan.
Oh, yeah, of course they do.
And they see these reports, and they immediately get their little Blackberries.
Oh, yeah.
And they send a text message to the cells in the United States saying, you're all in the clear. They're focused on dudes with basketballs blowing up the Sears Tower. Say hello to the strippers for us tonight.
Exactly. Yeah, when you go spend those 2 days in stripper heaven before you go further north for the 72 and the roast chicken. Just don't worry about it. Your path will not be impeded. Your progress will not be impeded. They're chasing
potheads.
They're chasing stoners with basketball.
They're chasing terrorist potheads. You know, there was an album or something out there from back in the early 70s that I once heard called A Child's Garden of Grass. And at some point it said, fun things to do when you're stoned, advisory, games with guns and knives are not advisable. And, you know, it's just the damn best advice there is to a bunch of high people. I mean, you know, stare at your thumbs until it looks like there's one thumb in the middle when you pull it away. I mean, that's engaging. Do the little, refigure out the little Jacob's ladder string thing that you learned in third grade. That can keep you going for days if the pot's good enough.
Or watch your laundry go around at the laundromat.
But, you know, a bunch of whacked up, I mean, I'm sorry, I've known a lot of these people. Kind of been one of these people from time to time.
So have I.
And a bunch of whacked out potheads are not sitting around thinking about anything that's going to take them a hell of a lot of activity.
Well, what's the greatest oxymoron on the planet? Marijuana initiative.
Oh, God. I know, you know, you remember the old, dude, this is your brain. This is your brain on drugs, you know, with the egg in the skillet.
Right.
I will never forget this beautiful, beautiful girl one night looking over at me and saying, dude, you're going to eat that.
Well, that's like the old joke when I lived in Oregon about what's the hippie babysitter? And the joke was, well, you just paint your baby's fingers with maple syrup, give them a quarter hit of acid and a feather. They're great for the rest of the day.
Oh, my God. Oh, and there were people out there who took that literally.
Yeah, well, yeah, like Courtney Love's parents, but that's another story.
Yeah. That's the entertainment segment of the program.
Yeah, save that for the orange section when the charts go away, because Lord knows she was never playing by any chart.
No. I'm hurting. You know, God bless you for this, because I've pulled away from it. I mean, I was. You're right, I was doing some first-class liver eating.
Well, you know, when good friends are hurting, other good friends laugh. Geez, did I say that right? I'm not sure.
Well, you know, I think even if you didn't, I think you did. Oh God.
Well, I'm sure you've got lights ablink, and you know, I need to get out of the way and let everybody decide they want to continue to listen for the rest of the night.
What a little pick me up. That's like an ice cold shot of vodka or something.
Yeah.
I can, we're halfway done with the program. I can make it all the way to the end now.
Ooh.
QNN yeah. Got no news, but I got program.
You can coast from here.
A river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl. Don't be a fuddy duddy. Don't be a moon calf. You're not a moon calf, are you? Talk to you later, David.
God bless Mr. Duncanfield.
Indeed, and have a wonderful weekend.
Oh, I shall. May see a little snow. That'll be entertaining.
Huh, it ain't entertaining up here.
I'll drink hot coffee until it melts. We'll decide what's going to melt later. Bye.
All right, bye. Oh, I needed that in the worst way. Let's see. All right, let's try this. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, it's Albert.
Albert, how in the world are you, brother?
I've been snowed in down here, and snowed in with snow, and snowed in with a bunch of manure. But what else are you going to do?
Yeah, I know. I mean, you got to have something to keep you.
Certainly missed you. So, what do we got? What's been going on, Bob?
We're screwed.
Sad, isn't it? It's very sad.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I turn around and I sit here, and now we're talking about, well, Rudy, it sounds like Rudy's gone. which is, you know, ding dong, everybody.
Well, I don't think people fully understood. And I was, I'm sorry, I don't mean to serialize the program and talk about what I talked about last night, but I don't think urban America or urbane, sophisticated Republican America understands just exactly what resonance a Reverend Mac Huckstraby has on the great unwashed. Rudy never resonated with them. John McCain never resonated with them. Mitt Romney looks like he's been dipped in goose grease. He's so slippery. This guy, you know, they may wind up defaulting to what's his religion, Brother Mac.
You know, I really don't see any of them with a chance, and the only one that I see anybody passionate about on that side is Ron Paul. But
Right? You know, I like to think of him as right for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, he's well. You know, I certainly don't despise him like I do some of the others. But
no, you can almost forgive him part of the way, and then you realize that he thinks Social Security is a social evil, and workers' compensation is Bolshevism, and actually paying taxes to build roads and things like that is the creeping communism, and then you go, that's right, you're insane.
Yeah, see, that's all right. I tell you, a lot of my friends who maybe don't have the amount of time that I do in order to pay attention to this kind of stuff. Not that I've had a lot lately, but usually I have a lot more than most of my friends. And they all lean towards the whole, you know, I mean, in their hearts, we all love Emma Goldman. But it's kind of, you know, they'll be like, oh, you heard about this guy? And I'm like, yeah, I've heard about this guy. And, you know, I got to continually sit there, yes, 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 but you realize he wants to privatize the roads. And if he privatizes the roads, just for example, if he privatizes the roads, who can buy the roads? You? Can you buy the roads? Oh, no, you can't buy
I'm buying I-70. No, I'm not. The upkeep is hell. I've never been on I-70 that it wasn't nothing but road work. That one's busted.
Well, get off my road, boy. That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, yeah, and then what else do we got? We got, and then on the Democratic ticket, just, you know, I gotta be honest, I'm not very enthusiastic to go vote. I'm not pumped, I'm not charged. They don't get me excited.
Well, see, that's the thing, Albert. You and I are guys who are finally in our unquestionably adulthood. You know, you get to that point where you go kind of look around and you know, oh, shoot, I'm a full-on grown-up. I got to take this seriously.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, this is my adulthood. Time for me to make a difference. Got to make it count. No dress rehearsal. Want to, you know, really make an impact, make a moral choice in the voting booth. And let's see. So I'm going to, oh, rats.
Yeah. Thank you for calling me an adult, Bob.
Well, I mean, you've got good taste in beer. That means you're grown up. That means you're no longer willing to sit and swill old style. So, you know,
I owe you some. I definitely do. No, right now I'm partaking in a nice, beautiful amber, delicious hoppy brew that my friend's company over there, brewery out down in La Crosse, actually is starting to put in bottles. So I'm going to have to...
You ever drink any Liney?
Oh, Bob. No, not even in the same category.
Well, I didn't say it was, but I mean...
I've had a few, but once you taste this, this is the kind of stuff that we have available. So rarely is Liney in the cooler.
Yeah, because you live up in Beer Wonderland.
It's getting there. It's really, you know, that's a good thing. And I mean,
well, you know, I was talking with my son-in-law the other day. I brewed for, you know, as we've talked before, I brewed for quite a considerable period of time. And just as the family got older, and you know, pressing needs, and you know, yada yada yada, I kind of got out of it. But I tell you what, I'm very very close to getting back into it, because I remember how good it was, and I can do better than the rice guys.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, and that's, you know, plus, you know, I mean, but that, you know, and then that goes into the whole thing. I just real quick, I mean, I know I mentioned this the last time, but it's been a while since I've got to speak to you, and I missed you, so.
Well, we did, too. You know, we fret when we don't hear.
We're still alive and kicking.
You don't call, you don't write.
I don't write. But, you know, I do that with all my friends. You know, I'm really bad at keeping in touch, but I still love you the amount that I did the last time we spoke, so it's not like I forget you. But, no, you know, last time I called was the last time Bush vetoed S-CHIP.
Yeah.
I'll give about, you know, a couple weeks within that time
area. Yeah, now we've got a fresh veto of S-CHIP.
And now, yeah, and it's a fresh, you know, it's a fresh dose of, it's a fresh gallon of bile in my stomach now. And it's, you know, it does tie into the whole beer aspect of it, because you see here, you know, like, you know, don't get me into the Chicago guys yet, but as you know, the war on cannabis that you were speaking on earlier, costs us. Now that might be one thing Ron Paul does that I can, you know, certainly agree with, because it's just, you know, the whole war on cannabis is just
stupid.
Ethically. Well, it is. It's ethically, such a strong point for me, because it symbolizes so much that I believe that's wrong. You know, when we're arresting 829,000 people a year, and the number just keeps going up, it doesn't go down. It's, you know, a couple of years ago it was 700,000, and last year it was 800,000. Now it's 830,000. You know, this year it's probably going to be 900,000 or just about. And, you know, we waste, you know, $10 billion on that, and we lose $35 billion in tax revenue from the sale of this underground substance. You know, that right there, right then and there would pay for S-CHIP. You know, you and I paying $500 and everyone listening that pays taxes, you know, the real people that pay taxes, you know, 30% of our salaries go into taxes. Well, $550 of that goes right into the war on cannabis. And, you know, you could say war on drugs, but it's really just a war on cannabis, because, you know, they arrest more people for cannabis than all other drugs combined and all other violent crimes combined every year. So, you know, we're sitting here, you know, destroying people's lives, you know, and unfortunately, you know, just as another thing, my friend just got pinched. You would say they were in the southwest corner of Iowa, and I guess someone smelled something, even though they said they didn't do anything in the room, and the dog, and next thing you know, they're kicking in their door, and, you know, my friend asked for a warrant, the cop kicked the door in, put the cuffs on him, and stepped back outside the room, and left the door open. And, you know, it's just, you know, this is the kind of where everybody is now a suspect, everybody's a criminal, and just back with the Chicago guys, you know, everybody is a terrorist suspect, everybody. And that's one of the things that people that care about civil liberties and people that care about the Constitution and Bill of Rights and everything else that this country stands for and is grand and great and wonderful, you know, these are the things that I think we feared the most when they started talking the way they talked after 9/11. You know, we sit here and look at federal agents coming in and essentially building a bomb to put at the World Trade Center the first time. You know, like, that was FBI agents involved with that. They knew that that was going to happen. I mean, just go look at the court case of these, you know, those guys did it and they went through with it and, you know, they drove and they helped, but, you know, they had assistance. You know, like, even, you know, you talk about, even these guys, these hijackers, you know, they were living with a federal innate informant. They were living with him. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, you and I constantly got to sit here, and now you and I are the criminals, and they're the ones creating the criminals. I mean, they literally, from the ground up, creating the criminals.
Well, that's a fair question, Albert, because as we know from the trial of the Libertyville 7, which David and I were having a very good time about, those guys, there wasn't a criminal mastermind in a lot of them. The criminal masterminding was done entirely by the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Yep.
Now, and the idea was planted by them, yada, yada, yada. You know, and that's what we find out time and time again. All the really cool, nifty, James Bondy sort of sounding Bruce Willis movie effect evil bad guy stuff is concocted in the bowels of the FBI, and then they go out and look for a likely-looking moron and say, hey, you want to do this? And he goes, can I have a pair of shoes? And they go, and a basketball.
Yeah,
And he goes, cool, I'll do it. And they go, you're under arrest.
Yeah.
Well, never should have asked for the shoes.
Well, I mean, and that's that, and this is the whole thing. I mean, I thought, you know, I mean, to me that sounds like entrapment. I mean, to,
well, it is under any classic definition. But I'm sitting here looking at news stories and so forth, Albert. I mean, this one, our good friend David in South Carolina just sent this one along. Headline: Attorney General won't share info from CIA tapes inquiry. Attorney General Michael Mukasey, thank you, Dianne Feinstein. Did I forget to say thank you, Dianne? Attorney General Michael Mukasey on Friday rejected lawmakers' demands for information. That's one of those that you let roll around in your head like a little marble for a minute. Rejected lawmakers' demands for information. The Attorney General of the United States sent a letter back to the Congress of the United States saying, shove it.
Yeah.
And in letters to the House and Senate Judiciary Committee, Mukasey also said he would not appoint a special prosecutor to conduct the investigation, as has been requested. He said he would not turn over the material key congressional leaders are seeking, because doing so might be seen as bowing to, quote, political influence, unquote. You know, I think the right thing to do would be to take that letter from Attorney General Mukasey, have it rolled up and bronzed in its rolled-up form, and mail it over to Senator Dianne Feinstein and tell her to shove it up her ass.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that was mean of me. I'm a mean person tonight.
Oh, she's a war.
She's a collaborator.
Yes, and here we go, and here we sit here, while, I mean, you know how I get flustered. And this flusters me, because, you know, they destroyed evidence. They destroyed terror. You know, They destroyed their torture session. You know, with this guy, okay, or with these people, two or three tapes. I mean, first off, these are top secret documents, top secret archives. How would we not? I mean, one way or another, you and I would have suspected this for years. Okay, this would have been something that we would have said, yeah, sure, certainly that's going on. Are you surprised?
Well, see, yeah. One of the things that drives me crazy about this business of we destroyed them is, one, I'm sharp enough to parse language, all right? And they keep saying, we destroyed the tapes, we destroyed the tapes, we destroyed the tapes, we destroyed the tapes, as if we lived in a Betamax damn world. All right? So yeah. I'm sitting there going, yes, you destroyed the tapes. Oh, you beamish boys. But you didn't destroy the DVDs, did you? Because you haven't said, and any copies thereof in any form, be it digital or physical. Now, did you?
Well, here's the problem.
Well, wait, Albert.
You're exactly right. No, I just got to say this one thing. They're using tapes.
I know, and they're probably Betamax. They've got the only two Betamax players left in the world. And they paid $10,000 a piece for them with our money. And the interrogator geeks are going, have you seen this? This is so cool. It's got this remote control thingy on it, and it's got a wire, and it goes all the way to the machine. This way you can't lose it.
A wire.
Well, they did.
Well, I know, Bob.
But wait. So what happens is, they say, we don't have the tapes, we destroyed the tapes. And America goes, well, dang, they destroyed the tapes. Reckon we'll never know. And out of that reckon we'll never know comes a new set of suspicions, and I would call them paranoid, but they're not paranoid because, you know, they're about the Bush administration, and when it comes to the Bush administration, there's no such thing as paranoia.
Yeah, okay.
And that group of people with which I do not wholly agree who believe that on September 10th, 2001, that George W. Bush put on a little black coat with little black boots and a little black hat and planted little black bombs all over the World Trade Center, that crowd is now going, they destroyed the tapes. Because there was information about what really happened on 9/11 about them. That's the information they gave up that's on the tapes. And I just want to go, ah, oh, damn it! No, well, what's on the tapes is evidence of the sleazy, low-down, rotten, dirty levels to which this administration will stoop in order to flex its muscle. And, you know, maybe the secrets of 9/11 are on the tapes.
Maybe.
Maybe they are. But you know what? There's no evidence to suggest it whatsoever.
No, and while I would
but
be,
that's know. Started around, and you know what? With all that starting around, I know because there is some portion, I'm convinced, I mean, it's one of the things that Mark Levine and I agree on, some element, some portion of the so-called 9/11 truth movement is a complete COINTELPRO disinformation process.
Sure. Oh. That's that's without a doubt.
And so W and Dick are sitting in the Oval Office going, "Oh my God, they took the bait."
Yeah.
And then they're going, "Here," you know.
Yeah. Well, it's a self-perpetuating, you know, conspiracy theory. I mean, and now I'm the last person to ever, like, I don't think the word conspiracy theory just. You know, like, it doesn't shut down an argument for me. People say things like you know, Bill O'Reilly will talk about how, you know, oh, we, you know, it's yes or no answer in terms of Iraq. It's a yes or no answer in terms of this. It's a yes or no answer in terms of conspiracy theory. If you say, and they'll say words like conspiracy theory to shut up conversation about it, or they'll say things like keep Christ in Christmas to shut up, you know, conversation about it. And, you know, now this is the season, I guess. And, you know, I sit here and I look at all these signs on the road. And, you know, I may upset some people here, but that's just because people don't quite know. But, you know, if they continue, like, and I mean the right and the, you know, these people that continue on this line to do things like this where you try to stifle conversation or try to stifle dissent, or try to stifle, you know, any type of, we won't tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories around 9/11, like, which is what Bush said. You know, and certainly COINTELPRO without a doubt, you know, they're talking about energy beam weapons and holograms and, you know, things like that. And all things like that do is make people go, yeah, those guys are all crazy. I remember what I saw on TV and that's what happened. You know, and then, you know, there's also a movement in terms of the 9/11 truth, I guess you would call them, that don't fall into that category, and they seriously looking for empirical evidence. And you know, if you do your research, you kind of have to give them a little bit of credence, because they kind of are, you know, without a doubt. I mean, look at these guys. They're over here. I mean, look at what the government's doing. And I can say, well, you know, there could have been the secrets of 9/11 on these tapes. I don't even think it's not even responsible. That's irrelevant. They destroyed the tapes. Why? Because they wanted to cover up something, or they wanted to, and essentially, it's almost like a shell game, where it's like, oh, where's the Red Queen? Where's the Red Queen?
But
you know,
find
her and win.
The tapes are gone, but the discs ain't, and neither are the computer files.
But in the same breath, Bob, how is it even, yeah, we're torturing people. How is it relevant in terms of what we use? Yes, certainly. Waterboarding is torture. All they try to do is muddy the water. All they try to do, it's like, you know, listening to their excuses is like watching the American version of The Office. It's not the British version, and it's basically just a regurgitation of what he did verbatim. I mean, I don't know, I haven't seen any of the other ones, but, you know, I've read them, and it's the same thing.
So I'll tell you what, hey, Albert, it is Front Porch Friday.
Okay.
Let's see, I've checked a couple of lines here. Let's bring on at least, I think we may have some technical problems that'll keep everybody from hearing, but we'll check this as we go along.
All right.
Are you there, Preston?
Yes, I am.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Albert, speak.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Okay, so you can both hear each other. Beautiful, beautiful.
Fantastic.
Preston, we were coming up on the top of the hour, and I wanted to make sure that we got some front porches going on. What do you got this evening?
Well, a few things come to mind. I was just thinking about what Albert was saying about the war on cannabis and how many hundreds of thousands of people either are put in a cage over it or lose their homes or lose their jobs, lose their kids. We had a farmer here in Colorado I remember this news story a couple of years back. Guy about 65 who was losing his land due to just being squeezed out by concentrated capital, and he decided to use part of his land to grow some pot, or he let some people do it. He claimed he didn't know, but there was some evidence linking him. Who knows? He may have just been totally railroaded. But anyway, he was going to spend 3 years of his life, the last few years of his life, in a cage for that. And so anyway, Albert, I really appreciate you bringing up that topic. About invasions of privacy, being surveilled, violations of the Constitution. It's like, oh yeah, we're familiar with it.
Yeah.
And it's worldwide, actually. You know, they claim to be so anti-big government that they hate EPA or OSHA. They hate that kind of government. But as far as the DEA and ICE and NSA and CIA, oh, they're for relentless government, endless government. And it's global. And this war on drugs, it's a privatization of the drug trade. You were talking about privatization, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, this is the privatization of a drug trade. I mean, now they're going after Barack Obama. And the big accusation against him is that not that he may have used drugs, but he may have sold drugs. So that's what they're trying to nail him for. But the funny thing is...
But that there's, you know, there's a strategic issue there. And I don't know if the Obama campaign has the stones to do it, Preston. But anybody who tries to raise that issue should, you know, Obama should be able to just say, listen, haven't we gotten past this? We've had President Cokehead for 8 years now.
Right, right. And not just that, they're deeply involved with selling drugs. Bush's father, Bush Sr., was on the board of directors of Eli Lilly, the maker of Prozac.
Yeah.
A very powerful psychoactive. Some people get addicted to. Some people find relief in it, and more power to them. If they do, that's great. Other people, no. And other people prefer other options. And they've been using those options for millennia. And people think they've got a right to it.
And again, you know, this extends to things that are far more prosaic, Preston. And, you know, the herbal remedy, the vitamin industry, things like that. One of the reasons that there has been so little medical study of the efficacy of nutritional health is because most of the research is sponsored, which means paid for, of course, by the drug industry, and the drug industry has no interest whatsoever in studying something upon which it cannot obtain a patent.
So as a
consequence. Well, one of the great classic examples was the New Hampshire appearance that Willard Romney made, in which a guy in a wheelchair who had chronic constant pain looked at him, and there was, you may have both seen the video of this.
Yeah, multiple sclerosis he had.
Yeah, MS, I believe.
87 pounds. 87 pounds, he said.
And he said, you know, my doctor tells me marijuana has kept me alive.
Five doctors.
Yeah, and he said, you know, are you going to have me arrested? And he said, well, you know, you could take the pill. There's a pill out there.
Right, right, right.
And he goes, the thing makes me sick.
Yep. And there are countless cases like that all over the country. And, it's a huge issue. But with the Barack Obama thing, Eli Lilly is a powerful force in not just the economy, but in the politics.
Sure.
Lilly and Merck and many, many others. It's interesting. They send their scientists to shamans to learn about their psychoactives. They were in South America recently studying ayahuasca,
ayahuasca.
Tea that they drink. In Mississippi State University, they've got all sorts of studies going on around marijuana, trying to figure out how it is they can tweak it. Somehow.
Oh, I remember, Preston, I had a friend who went to law school at the University of Mississippi, and they have a farm there. Looks like a Christmas tree farm. And it's like, you know, German shepherds patrol inside, and there's four layers of fencing, and it's all just, you know, huge marijuana plants. And, you know, I remember standing outside the fence and sort of looking longingly at it. But But it's all for research purposes, and it's all for growing it, for synthesizing the stuff that go, what is it called, Marinol?
Marinol.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of them.
You know, it's such a denial of our own history and our own traditions as well. Thomas Jefferson, George Washington grew this stuff. They used hemp paper and hemp rope for years and years. We even have towns named after this stuff, Hempstead, Long Island.
Sure, sure. And being the Southerner that I am, Preston, I've mentioned a couple of times and encourage people to go and look. Just Google the words rattle and snap.
Rattle and map.
And snap. Rattle and snap. Yeah. Apparently a late 18th century, early 19th century dice game. Maybe it was like Yahtzee or something. But if you go and you look at the photographs of the plantation called Rattle and Snap in South Central Tennessee, you'll see one of the best examples of, you know, Southern architecture extant. And that was not a cotton plantation. That was a hemp plantation.
Okay.
Provided the great majority of hemp rope-making materials to the United States Navy and the United States Army. And, in fact, it is the Polk family of James K. Polk, President Polk.
Polk? Oh, that's Bush's. No, that's Bush's family then, because...
No, that's Pierce.
Pierce. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But anyway, Preston, you're and Albert, both of you have so much right on this. One of the other things that bears, and this is only because I've got a little bit of a background and a fascination with archaeology and prehistory and stuff like that. It was my understanding at one point in time, the data may have changed since, but there were uncovered on the steps below the frost line, so that things had been actually preserved, there were discovered encampments where there were pots found, and inside these pots were cannabis seeds.
Yeah.
And what the researchers were able to extrapolate is that the usage of it was not done on a solo basis, but that it was a communal activity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost always the case with tribal societies. Everybody gets a little bit wasted.
Yep.
And they don't do that, and then they go and raid the next village or next tribe or whatever. They commune with whatever's going on in their heads, and nine times out of ten with those primitive societies, they call it gods. But, yeah, go ahead, Albert. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to kind of, you know, I mean, we're talking about the history of this plant and this whole subject matter, and it goes right down to the heart of something that I'd like to talk about 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're sitting here looking at a plant, okay? Now, this plant, right, we're here sitting here in the season. I mean, it not only goes back to, you know, 10,000 years ago in the steppe where people would not only eat the seed for nutrition, they would use the plant and the resins of that to, you know, get high and communicate with the gods, or, you know, heal ailments and like leprosy and so forth. I mean, today's religion, and this is what I say, you know, they say keep Christ and Christmas and all this other stuff. I mean, real quick, you know, the more that they sit there and they try to say that, the more that they turn their Jesus Christ figurehead into an anthropomorphized, you know, myth. You know, they sit there, the more they try to connect that person.
I want to keep Mithras in Mithraism.
Yeah, exactly. Mithra, Horus. You know, all these different
Adonis, don't forget Adonis. He's there too.
All of the Hercules, even.
Born of a virgin.
Couldn't
swing a dead cat in the ancient world without hitting a god, born of a virgin.
Without or performing miracles or what have you. But one of the things that, you know, people talk about, you know, and they say Jesus Christ, and they always say Christ, is, and they use that word, and it's almost like, you know, we're talking about hemp and pot, and we're seeing now people, you know, almost a million. We're going to reach one, you know, soon in our lifetime. We're going to sit a million people a year are going to get arrested for this plant and its use and what have you. I mean, a million people. Think about that. A million for this one plant in this country, not in any worldwide. This is in the United States. Now,
you know, I think Albert, we need to give you a show on the weekend.
Please.
We can call it Weed Talk.
We could talk. Well, I could call. Yeah, we could. I'll talk about science. I'll talk about all kinds of stuff. I'd love it. Real quick. I mean, this is one thing that I'll keep.
I'm not gooning on you. I hope you understand. I'm not
kidding.
I like the idea, actually. And we need it. It's such a transpartisan issue as well. There are a lot of Republicans and lefties alike who are together on this. You know, everybody from Bill Buckley to Carl Sagan, actually, in one of his biographies, he talks about his own marijuana use and how it enriched his life in both professional and personal ways.
Well, look, I can tell you from personal experience, and this is no big revelation or anything, it's very frustrating for us here at the mansion because Agnes has a chronic pain condition.
Okay.
And sometimes it flares up and sometimes it's not so bad, but there's probably a day that doesn't go by that she doesn't have some level of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And because our medical practitioners are so absolutely bananas and have been so thoroughly, I mean, you want to talk about terrorism, our medical practitioners in this country have been utterly terrorized by an utterly useless federal organization by the name of the Drug Enforcement Administration. You know, you've got to have a DEA number on your script pad, and if they want to come down on you, they'll twist the screws real hard. So it's nothing, and because this is also the Appalachians, and, you know, we're the center of the oxycodone problem, you know, not Rush Limbaugh, some dude up the holler who ruined his back in the damn mines who can't stand up straight in less than 5 minutes' time. He's the problem. As a consequence of all that, you cannot get doctors to give relevant, ameliorative pain medication.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's my lovely, darling, beloved wife who has to have help to get off the couch right now. And I'm not kidding.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to the doctor, and he says, well, you know, here's some, let's give you a shot of Toradol, and here's some Toradol pills, and here's some muscle relaxers. And, you know, they don't do anything.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And the fact of the matter is, and I'm not arguing that he should, you know, give her, you know, OxyContin and tell her to chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor or anything. But there are means of managing the pain out there that are not available to her.
Yep.
Because the federal government, by virtue of the crackdown of the pharmaceutical industry, has a real hard-on for a weed.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I mean, I didn't quite finish my point, but certainly cannabis can, you know, cannabis touches pain that opiates could never even couldn't want to. If they tried, opiates couldn't touch. And especially, like, that's why, you know, a lot of people for fibromyalgia and all types of MS, you know, like opiates, they don't do anything to knock you out. You know, they make you not feel. But, you know, the thing about cannabis is, and this is something that, you know, back when they made it illegal, I mean, we really need, you know, people talk about hearings of this and that. You know, we really need to revisit the hearings that made cannabis illegal in the first place. And I know I mentioned it to you, Bob, 1935 Senate hearings to make marijuana with an H, not with a J, to make that illegal. They talked about, you know, black men would step on a white man's shadow, and black men would look at a white woman twice, and they would actually, you know, they'd get up in airs, and, you know, all this other nonsense that they came up with, racism. I mean, literally, they would never, I mean, people, if they tried to do that to this day, they would, forget it. They'd be a complete laugh out. They'd no matter what party did it, they'd completely laugh them out of the halls of Congress, because it was so outrageously racist. It was so outrageously ignorant.
Intolerably, I mean,
Oh, without a doubt. We're talking doctors. Doctors, back in the day, right? I mean, we're talking pre-1935. Before then, 30% of all medicines prescribed had cannabis or some sort of derivative related to it in it.
That and alcohol.
But it was called cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was called cannabis. And it was. And the thing is, they called it marijuana. The doctors didn't know what it was. They didn't know what marijuana was. They heard it was a devil's weed. Well, marijuana and cannabis happened to be the same thing, but by the time the doctors turned around and looked, it was over.
Yeah.
And, you know, marijuana tax stamp and everything else like that they have now. And now we're arresting, I mean, a million people. We're sitting here looking at, you know, and you know NPR, ugh. But, you know, they're sitting here talking about the medical industry and the doctors are like, well, what can we do? What can we do? What can we do? Well, we can stop cannibalizing patients. We can stop cannibalizing our citizens in terms of that's because that's what we're doing. We're eating people. Like he said earlier, you know, they're putting people in cages, taking their houses, taking their vehicles, making them lose their jobs. You know, all for this substance. I mean, I guarantee, and if I'm wrong, then I'm sorry, but whatever Agnes's condition is, I you know, I bet a brownie or two would help her out,
help her function, help her get up on her own. Make
yeah,
her
but you see, I can't do that. I can't. Well, and you know, we've had this conversation, and she says,
yeah.
you know, I can't. We can't take that risk
yeah.
because
yeah.
they won't just take our house. They won't just take.
Sure.
They won't just shut down the horn. They'll take our children.
Yep. And they'll take your house and sell it before you even go to court. So,
yeah.
yeah.
So, you know, we can't do something like that.
No, but what we can do...
So what she has to do is lay there and ache and suffer and hurt. And I think about something like that, and it's terribly personal to me, guys.
No, I believe
and it may, I get, yeah. you know, I get madder than hell, and, you know, God forbid I should ever be at a cocktail party with the head of the DEA. I'd throw a drink in his face.
Oh, he's... no. Yeah.
See how I made that palatable for Agent Fred? I'd throw a drink in his face. I'd throw his drink in his face because it would be a symbolic gesture whereby I said, hey, look, dumbass, you're sitting there using drugs.
Drugs.
Alcohol is a drug.
We have a lot of work to do.
Hey guys, I've got a couple more stacked up. Albert, if you don't mind, I'll roll along because I know I can't get more than two on here right now.
No problem.
But my goodness, what a joy! You know, don't be so snowbound so long next time, okay?
I will. I'll try to give you a ring next week.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right, I'll take
care. Bye now.
You too.
Stand by there, Preston.
Okay.
And let's see. Here we go. Darn it. Hi, who have I got?
Good evening.
Hey, David, how are you?
Yes, I'm fine. I think I have a profound quote to open up the evening with.
Okay.
Minds are the real estate of the new millennium. That's by Chuck D.
That's pretty cool.
Great. I just saw Chuck D last night on the Sundance Channel.
Yeah.
He does this interview show, Chuck D's studio or something like that, and he was interviewing Quincy Jones. Great. Fantastic thinker and artist,
and with that on the agenda, when you're talking about all of the rules and regulations, I think I should bring it to people's attention that they are arresting people left and right just from copyright violations, and they're shutting sites down left and right, and they are about to close in on Sweden. And why that's
we're invading Sweden.
They want to get Pirate Bay. That's the whole idea, you know. That's the if people don't know, Pirate Bay is like the Cuba of the torrent world.
Okay.
And why this is important is people need to understand that behind the scenes right now, what we're seeing is a whole industry collapse on itself. There's an article I got to send you, Bob. It's about Doug Morris, who's the president of Universal, and it talks about what happened and why they can't get the profits that they want. And he's so stuck in his mindset that he says everything has to have a price on it. So I mean, that's the kind of society we live in. And what you're seeing behind the scenes is people are actually doing illegal types of harassments. They're sending letters. They're doing phone calls now. It's getting pretty ugly, and it's to the point of like, they're gonna start seriously changing a lot of laws. They have there's a case in the UK. I don't make this up. There's a case in the UK where a lady was playing on the radio. Some kids, I guess, were singing Happy Birthday.
Oh yeah, the Happy Birthday controversy. You know, you've got an issue. You've got a hold of an issue there that actually goes further than what you may have contemplated, David and Preston.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this too, because I heard, and again, I guess it's becoming rather obvious that this Repiglican dog and pony show that I saw a couple of days ago. Really, you know, I'm still talking about it. I feel like I felt when I walked out of Jaws back in the early 70s. You know, still talking about it, because it was just horror. And they kept talking about human value, and that thing sort of bounced around inside my skull until I had to, because it's, you know, human beings have value. We forget about the value of human life, and I could not help eventually, you ever have a word inside your head and you say, is that really how that word's said? Because suddenly English doesn't sound like English to you anymore.
Okay.
Human value. Human life has value. The value of the human being. And that word value kept just running up against my cerebral cortex or something. And I sort of stopped and stood back and said, wait a minute. We're talking about measuring the right of a human being to be on this planet and ascribing to it some worth.
Like a market value.
Like a market value, precisely, Preston. And I went, holy crap, that's right exactly where they live.
Yep.
They cannot look, and let's be fair, this doesn't just apply to Repiglicans, it applies to Democrats as well. It applies to a lot of humanity, that we cannot look at something without saying, I wonder what I could get for it.
Yeah.
I was looking through a book of antiquities. And everything, and this terracotta this terracotta sculpture made by the Olmec people is currently valued at $350,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped and I said, how obscene is that? Either the thing pleases you or it doesn't. Either the thing is beautiful or it isn't. Either it is something that that incites in you reverence for its maker 2,000, 4,000 years ago, or it doesn't. But meanwhile, the vast majority of humanity would look at it and go, well, I bet that at auction for a big old price at Sotheby's.
Yeah. And a lot of Iraqi antiquities are now on that market.
Sure,
Real shame.
You know, when you're talking about antiquities, that's interesting because I'm in business with a lot of auctions and stuff like that. Right now, reselling and stuff like that. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is when you look at books and stuff like that, and you look at the authors, look at the businesses they're tied to, and that'll scare the crap out of you, because then you start to realize all these people who have these books on any kind of value. They're tied to an organization. They're tied to a connection of pushing that value that was never there in the first place.
Before I forget, Bob, and that was a great point. But I wanted to ask you before you have to go. I wanted to let you know that I went to YouTube and I watched the Finish the Job video.
Didn't that just blow you away?
It sure did, and it motivated me to send them some money. I think there's a sponsoring group like the Mississippi Community Fund, but
yeah, it's the Finish the Job. It's finishthejobfund.org or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And when you go to donate, it goes to this kind of sponsoring organization. At least that's how I remember it. And also, I wanted to ask you. Now you're separate from White Rose.
Yes.
Somehow. Okay.
Yes.
If people wanted to send money to you, what's the best way? Is there a PayPal?
There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com.
I keep missing it, I guess.
It's right at the top, but depending on what resolution, I've just learned that we've got a little bit of a problem. But okay. If you, depending on the resolution of your monitor, you might have to slide over toward the right, but it's right there on the top under the main banner. There are three subscription buttons and just a plain donate button, which I wish said contribute.
And
then there's also something that says contact us, and it has the mailbox if you want to do snail mail.
Okay. And if I want to make out a check, who would I make it out to?
Just head on.
Okay. All right. And also, I want to mention, I wanted to send a shout out to Bob in North Dakota. I agree with you. I think he just hit the home run on, what we need to hear about our inalienable rights. And I was really moved by what he was saying. And he brought to mind Eugene Debs. I'm sure you know that figure.
Oh, yes.
The socialist who spent part of his time in jail. And he said something that I want to read real quick.
Go ahead.
He said, "Full opportunity for full development is the unalienable right of all. He who denies it is a tyrant. He who does not demand it is a coward. He who is indifferent to it is a slave. He who does not desire it is dead. The earth for all the people, that is the demand." Eugene Debs.
And okay. And the sad thing, Preston, is that that's such a deemed such a radical notion.
Radical or naive or childish.
Don't forget overly idealistic.
All that stuff. We have to, you know, what's really been entrenched in us is cynicism. That, you know, once you learn what's really going on, you'll just kind of laugh at our predicament and accept it. And, you know, and that's what I mean by beyond the political disinformation. There's a lot of psychological and attitudinal manipulation going on that demoralizes us and, you know, just blunts a lot of what could be going on movement-wise. And so it's fun to say those words once again and not, you know, and to take it seriously. And listening to Bob in North Dakota, I know that the spirit of Debs lives, and I really respect what he had to say.
Well, as do I. It's part of what made the front end of this program so really painfully difficult, because, you know, one, I had a technical mess up at the start of the program, and we haven't had any news tonight. So, for all I know, you know, the world's on fire. But I trust you, one of you guys would tell me. But beyond that, it is a walk in the swamp, Preston.
Yes, it is.
And some, you know, Jim said something to me earlier that stays with me and kind of bothers me. He said, if I had to, you know, if I had to be so negative every night, I'm not being negative. I'm being fact-based.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I remember when Ted Turner tried to start something on TBS called Good News, because he said he got tired of the if it bleeds, it leads mentality of television news. So he just tried to put together a program of good things happening. And frankly, they ran out of material.
That's too bad. You know, I used to subscribe to a magazine called Hope, and they didn't get enough subscribers.
and it's not because we want to. It's not because anybody particularly wants to hear me open a vein, but it's the fact that there are a lot of people in this country who, despite what we are handed on a daily basis, actually are paying attention and are tapped into what is going on means.
Yeah.
And I sense that they want to hear somebody say that it's okay to be pissed off about it.
Yeah, we don't see those other concerned people reflected in much of the media. We have our pockets, our oases, but we just don't see a lot of it. And you know, all the reasons that cause our cynicism are valid. I'm not denying any of the problems. In fact, there's some scenarios that I could, you know, that are quite catastrophic. I'm not denying that at all. In fact, I think it's kind of miraculous that we're here. I mean, you look at how many times we've come close to nuclear launches. I mean, within seconds, a dozen times,
yeah.
You were going to just let it all go. And that, you know, I mean, it's bad enough it was just us and the Russians, but we threatened all of the globe. And, but we're here. So we've made it this far, and I give thanks for this day, and I give thanks for the people who are reminding us of our humanity and our ability to overcome so many horrible situations. I'm reading a book right now called Nuclear Nebraska, and it's the subtitle is The Remarkable Story of the Little County That Couldn't Be Bought, and it's about how the five state governments, the federal government, and two multinational corporations approached this rural farming community in Nebraska. They were going to pay them $3 million a year to take their nuclear waste. And this town wouldn't have it, and they won. So
And there are pockets of that. I mean, there's some good news out there. I'm sure you've seen the story, Preston, David, of, what is it, Potrero, California? Have you seen this?
I don't think so.
Their city council had done a deal with the devil with Blackwater.
Okay.
And the city residents threw out the city council people who had done the deal with the devil and told Blackwater to go packing.
Great. I didn't hear that part of the story. I knew they were trying to make inroads there. You know, and I'm sure they'll move someplace else, set up camp, and, you know, that inertia, that kind of evil force marches along.
But we are we're such a big country that it seems like the good does get drowned out because, Sunday, I think, maybe Monday at the latest, the demolition is going to begin over on the, the housing units in New Orleans where they're going to destroy thousands of housing units and replace them with, 400?
Right.
You know, I've got an article here that I found at, Op-Ed News with regard to Cyril Neville. And he's got a new song out, and it's downloadable there. If you go and look for Cyril Neville at Op-Ed News, I'm sure you'll find it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's been reticent in the past about talking about what's going on in New Orleans because he kind of got burnt early on, and he's kind of desperate to have people understand that he didn't just bail out on New Orleans and move to Austin forever because that wasn't his intention. But yeah, he has been borne out by various and sundry groups and studies, people like Amnesty International and others. And he's talking in very plain terms about what's being done there. And for the love of God, it's heart-rending.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you look at what's going on there. You know, on the one hand, you got a little town that has told Blackwater to stuff it. But on the other, you've got a town that, a full-blown city that is being, and there, you know, at this point in time, there's no getting around it, being ethnically cleansed.
Yep. Yep. You know, and there's that horrible, dislocation going on and going on a smaller scale in so many other parts of the country. There are so many drilling battles, there's something called sour gas drilling. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No, that's a new one.
Okay. Well, it's this kind of drilling where if they have a release of this sour gas, and it's sour because it has, like, something extremely toxic in it, and if there's an accidental release or pipe leaks, people could die. And they've had accidents in the past, and anyway, and there's the noise issue and the pollution of the water, et cetera, et cetera. And we often don't hear these stories, you know, not just of the resistance, but of the oppression. It's flat-out oppression going on, including white people, you know, and even wealthy people.
There's all kinds of examples of that, Preston, because... consider something that got raised on the program a couple of nights ago. The vast majority of the people who are losing their homes in foreclosure are not deadbeats. They're middle class.
Right.
The
right.
Vast majority of the people who have had their worlds turned upside down by the shiv in the ribs that we got from Democrats and Republicans in Congress by way of the so-called Bankruptcy Reform Act, 75% of those people are people who have been crushed by medical bills, and it bears remembering that they were not people who did not have insurance. They were insured individuals who are being crushed by the damn copay.
Yep, and if there are those people who have made, let's say, $100,000 or $200,000 a year, how many hours of their lives are they losing? I mean, we just accept now a 60-hour work week. And that's something that was, courageously fought against.
And, curse of the free market.
Yeah, yeah. United pilots losing their pensions. I mean, just this thievery going on all over the place.
Yeah, and it is. It's outright. If you caught one dude doing it with a knife or a gun, we'd put him in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a high-toned CEO who knows which year's Cabernet was especially fine with the Kobe beef, well, he's a business genius.
Exactly. I think it was Woody Guthrie. He had a line something like, some people rob you with a stick shooter and some people rob you with a ballpoint pen.
Yeah. I mean, this quote from Cyril Neville. He says, I left New Orleans because my life had been devastated by the storm and its aftermath. Up until that time, for 57 years, I had stayed in the city I love, and I love it no matter what. I love its people, and it is where the bones of my mother and father lie. It is home. I think it's important that the people involved in this struggle know that I stand with them, and that the song, and in the song that I speak of here is a rallying song for this monumental movement. After all, I am a charity hospital baby from the Calliope Projects. Those are the ones that are going to be torn down. The Calliope Projects, born and bred in the bricks. So let me see if I can make this go for a minute, guys, because I know you're both tapped in and tuned into the whole the music experience. Let me see if I can get this thing to open, and we'll sit and listen to it together, if that's okay.
Oh, that'd be great. They've got a song called Sons and Daughters, I think it's called.
It's called The Projects. Here we go. I think okay. It's going to load.
Great.
Cyril Neville.
The Projects. The Projects. The Projects. The Projects. The Projects. The
Your projects. I was born and raised in the old bricks. I was 6 blocks away. I watched my brothers singing and playing ball. I took my first swim, y'all, in Rosenwald. I fell in love early with the project pattern. I got my ass whipped for hanging in front of Rose Tavern. Back then, the bricks was fun and thrilling. Running a lot of fighting, very little killing. The bricks then was full of laughter and hope. We played with toys, not guns, and there wasn't much dope.
Uptown is the 13th
wall. Where you from don't determine if you're soft or hard.
Hold on. The born and bred in the project. The project. No. The born and bred in the project. The project. No. The born and bred in the project. The project. No. The born and bred in the project. The project.
From the Lord 96 to the Melbourne Mean. Town, Hollywood, the Big 13. Katie, Mac, man, 35 degrees. We all from one big village called New Orleans. It don't matter if you're from a different hood. We still from in the same city, so y'all, it's all good. Let's get together for the shorties, make a better tomorrow. They felt enough pain, seen enough sorrow. Be real with each other, let's make a better way. Cause who be living better tomorrow is getting together today. Now all your hot girls and all your hot boys, if you're down with what I'm saying, come on, make some noise.
Hold on. Born and bred in the project, the project, the bricks. The born and bred in the project, the project, the bricks. The born and bred in the project, the project, the bricks. The born and bred in the project, the project.
From the arts to the painters, to the Venus, to Jaws, Case, Chris, G, Mike's, Adidas. I gotta admit, doll from the A-Wall life. I done had some lighter things and had some darker nights. I had a girlfriend at the time I was single. Halloween was hollow, the Christmas it did jiggle. Some days it was this, some days it was that. They had friends that'd stab you in the back. See, I'm a hardy double hustler, A-Wall stunner. And the Jesse don't matter if it's winter or summer. Mamas keep telling the boys to clean the room up. But me and someone double, father and son hustlers.
Born and bred in the project, the project,
the bricks.
The born and bred in the project, the project,
the bricks.
The born and bred in the project,
the project,
the bricks.
The born and bred in the project,
the St. Thomas, the Magnolia, the Desire Project down in the Ninth Ward, the Defeat Project. The Island Project, San Bernard, and then up to New York City, y'all. The Red Hook in Brooklyn. And man, almost everybody on Motown came out of the Rooster Homes.
in Detroit. The projects. Ain't nothing wrong with it. Don't let nobody lie to y'all. It's right with you. Gotta do. The Dixie Cups, the Neville Brothers, Master P and his brothers. Big Tyler. George Davis. Ain't nothing wrong being born in the Bronx.
Wow.
Great.
Oops, I had it on recirculate.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I enjoyed that.
But there's a heck of a message in there, isn't there?
Yes, indeed. I liked how they utilized that hip-hop style so much. It's become a movement of sorts. You know, speaking of movements going on.
Well, you know, what I love is when you hear a snooty white musicologist who graduated with a degree in music history from Frankfurt University saying, you know, I love those blues musics. And you'll get the, you know, the uptight Republican types with their rep ties and their their button down everythings. And they'll say, that's an American, that's a classic American art form. And it came out of, did they think that Robert Johnson was born in a gated community?
You know, Bob, the funny thing about that is a lot of people think, like, they criticize the blues just like they criticize hip-hop. But here's the thing that people have to remember, and I said this before. They shut down the music programs in the city. This is what they had to do. They had to go in the YMCA and hook up the turntables. That's what they had to do. And you're criticizing them for revolutionizing an entire cultural movement across the entire world? Yeah, good one. I mean, think about it.
I know.
It's a real shame how it gets portrayed by some people, some of our cultural crusading types on the right wing who try to present rap as just violent and it hates women. And again, there is that element of truth to that argument. But if that's all they emphasize, that's all they ever talk about.
Well, and you've got that element of the right wing that thinks that if they've listened to Elvis doing In the Ghetto in the last 6 months, that that's okay. I'm down with the poverty problem.
You know, I just wanted to say one thing that I noticed when I was listening to that, and I kept thinking to myself, where's the Bob Geldof of hip hop for Katrina? I mean, there are people like Jay-Z. There are people out there that can go out and go out of their way and do something. And the fact that they're just building their assets for themselves, I mean, this strikes me as a big-time tragedy.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, I mean, you want to talk about tragedy? You know, I was talking to that very project that he grew up in is the one that's coming down. Dig it. Because this is, to recall George Bush in the campaign in 2000, this is your money. All right. You're going to spend, and perhaps it makes a little bit of a difference if we put it that way. You're going to spend, not the government's going to spend. You're going to spend $762 million to tear down 4,600 public housing units and replace them with 744 units that are going to cost $200,000 a building or some such.
You know, Bob, you know what the greatest humor in all of this is? That the greatest attention we get from Hollywood and the entertainment world, the one who really stands, is a guy who showed his ass and telling Louise and he's blue-eyed and blonde-haired. I mean, my God, is this the best anyone can do?
Dude, this is going to go down tomorrow.
I know.
The HUD guys are going to take out Lafitte, St. Bernard, C.J. Pete, and B.W. Cooper Calliope housing projects.
And look what the people are talking about in the music industry, what I'm talking about, people who are connected to New Orleans and all of this, and just the hip-hop industry in general. When they can do something, they're at the corner, they're at the forefront. What are they talking about? They're talking about, I'm losing money from my iTunes.
But then there's Kanye West.
Yeah. I can understand Kanye with his mother and all,
yeah.
But beforehand, he just dropped out completely.
Well,
this one,
tiny little ironic inquiry for the both of you.
Yeah.
Once they have gentrified New Orleans and made it safe for Whitey.
Yeah.
When New Orleans floods and drowns again, is Fox News going to, and Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest of the filth crowd, are they going to talk about how damn stupid the white people were for not getting out?
No. No, it's about demonizing the culture.
Well, one, it won't flood again. Well, yeah, it's going to flood again because I was reminded a couple of days ago, one of Jeb Bush's cronies was the guy who supplied the new pumps for the new levees, and the pumps don't work.
Okay. Interesting.
You know,
that's a good question. I'm not sure what.
The whole thing to me, I know what's going to happen, Bob. They're gonna rewrite history and call it like the great New Orleans tragedy, and they're gonna act like black people didn't even live there, and they're gonna be playing like the nouveau version of Lawrence Welk.
I heard that.
Don't say Lawrence Welk, because that makes me have to tell the terrible story about Milton Berle. Milton Berle was smoking a really stinking cigar, and somebody asked him, he said, Milton, what is that? And he said, it's a Lawrence Welk. And they said, what's a Lawrence Welk? And he said, it's a piece of crap with a band around it. Sorry. Preston, you were going to say something?
Yeah, there's an article at, I think, commondreams.org yesterday regarding the New Orleans public housing. And I read in the article that while this law is being passed, this movement's going to take place. There's going to be a lot of protest around it. And the article is accompanied by a fantastic photo of a lawyer, an Anglo guy, actually, coming out of the, I don't know, jail or something, because he was arrested himself. He got handcuffed at a city council meeting that was supposed to be closed doors, but he went in it representing the public housing residents, and they arrested him, handcuffed him, took him away. When he was released, there are these African-American ladies who surrounded him, and the photo is, he's bookended by these African-American ladies, and there's this black hand reaching above, over them and rubbing him on his bald spot, and it's just a fantastic photo.
Oh, God.
If you get a chance.
Hey, guys, I got to roll along. This has been a fun conversation. Thank you both so very much.
My pleasure, Bob. And
no problem, Bob.
Have a great weekend, as usual.
You too. You have a great weekend.
All right. Take it easy. Preston, thanks for everything. I love what you and David and all the others bring to the table on these Friday nights.
Yeah, good talking to you, David.
Yeah, good talking to you, Preston.
Good night, Matt. Peace.
Later.
Bye, guys. Okay, and let's see. I think we've got, I hope we've still got, our good friend Ed on the line. You there, Ed?
Yeah, Bob.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I listened first part of your program to one of my phones went dead, and then decided to call back and try listening a little bit more. But I keep getting this stuff run by about what the Congress has done on approving all this is either $70 or $90 billion for this war again, and in addition to that, they approved $286 billion for the farmers, and that includes the wealthy ones too. And it's maybe I'm too simple to understand what's going on.
No, I wouldn't say that by a long stretch, Ed, because I'm fit to be tied as it stands myself, and I'm about give up. I'm about give up.
Well, I think we have got our hunting kicked. And Bush talked, you know, not giving any leeway on more coverage for the kids. But yet, you know, we can't keep our kids well, but we were allowed to kill the young Americans that is over in Iraq. You talking about being backwards or turned around or twisted up in an egg beater, it seems like that everything in this nation is there's not an ounce of common sense put in it.
There's not 10 cents worth of common sense in the Congress, that's for sure. I think there's the American people have made it plain what they want. They've told the Congress what they want. But the Congress plainly refuses to do the people's bidding.
Yeah. Well, you know, I said early on that I had, I mean, real early on, before she got in office, that I liked Nancy Pelosi. But I have no use. She is about gutless, you know, and to pull that impeachment off the table is baffling. That's all I can say. It blows my mind.
Well, it's not baffling to me anymore, Ed, because like I said, I'm about to give up, and I've come to a conclusion. I'm happy with it, and I'm going to live with it, and that is that these people are willing to sacrifice all of us. You know, we're the ones doing the sacrificing. And they're more than happy for us to do it, whether we're sacrificing our children, our brothers, our sisters, in the hellhole that is Iraq. They're willing to sacrifice people on the Gulf Coast. There was a horrible flood that's been utterly unreported in the American Northwest, up in Washington State.
In Washington, yeah, I heard about that.
And the Congress will happily sacrifice every last person in this country if they think that it will end in their consolidation of power in November 2008.
Well, you know, you'd like to think that there's a scheme that the Democrats have got to go ahead and give Bush all the leeway he wants, and then use it to hang the Republicans with later. But I just don't see what they've done today and yesterday. There is no fight at all. They're
terrified.
Down and laying dead.
Ed, I mean, you've seen... I know, Ed, knowing you. I know you've seen a few kicked dogs in your day.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen how a kicked dog behaves. A kicked dog wants to be kicked after a while. And that's what the Democrats are. They want to be kicked.
I'm not one of them, but I don't know what to do about it, Bob, except express my opinion and talk to people. But people seem to be in a trance. They're just going about trying to live till Thursday or Friday, till payday, and get by another week.
Go along to get along, Ed.
Yes, I'm just so disappointed in, and you know what? Lou Dobbs, like him or not like him, he is getting thousands of independents signed up. And that's definitely going to hurt the Democrat Party. And, you know, I mentioned early on I didn't like Hillary Clinton. I even like her less now. And Obama, when Jesse Jackson came out for him, that was the first strike.
Yeah. Let me share something with you. I got a letter from my congressman today. It took from November 30th to December the 14th to reach me. It says, thank you for contacting your congressional office regarding impeachment of President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney. I appreciate hearing from you. Please be assured that I understand your concerns and will keep them firmly in mind. As always, your interests and concerns are important to me. Thank you for contacting me about this issue. You can visit my website to sign up for electronic updates on issues important to you. May God richly bless your family and you and heal our nation. Please feel free to call upon me any time that I may try to be of assistance. With warm regard, I am Rubber Stamp.
Damn, he might as well not answered.
Yeah. That was my money he used writing back to me, you know, the franking privilege.
Huh?
That was my money he used to write back to me. You know, we give him free free access to the postal
right.
postal service. May God bless your family and you and heal our nation. Well, I appreciate the sentiments, you know, but I'm not asking God to do anything. I'm one of those who believes that God helps those who help themselves. And as a consequence, I'm not prone to waiting on God to impeach George Bush. I need him to impeach George Bush.
Yeah. You know, if this had been Clinton, he would have been gone.
Oh, they'd have strung him up.
Yeah, and it is, you know, I really can't describe how I feel. You know, the disappointment in the United States government, as a whole, it's like getting a whole bushel of rotten apples. You know, one apple will slowly rotten the rest, but when you get a whole bushel of them at one time, it's hard to really take a look at them and accept it.
Yeah, and you can't always see the ones got the worm in it either. Hey, Ed, good talking to you, my friend.
Yep, Bob, well, thank you for your time.
We will talk again soon, I hope.
Yep, sure will.
Take care now.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Tell everybody to sit high.
I sure will, and you just did.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's see. Try to squeeze one more phone call in here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Bob. I appreciate the chance to double dip.
Dip away. But
gosh, you know, I was away for a bit, and I heard the Neville, I heard Cyril, and I was so invigorated. I could, if I was too ego-driven, speak about the times that I've spent around the Neville brothers, or I could, like, give some almost professorial opinion on where rap was good and where it wasn't. But this business of our elected officials taking Democrats for granted, you know, it's frightening me to death that by waiting for the election in 08 and being so passive and being so lay down and being so cowardly that they may so repudiate, that's not the right word, they may so disgust we honest Democratic voters that we may say, I can't pull a lever even for my own, because we know that what is it, 15% of the electorate that is the hardcore right? You know, they'll get over their differences come November 08. And, you know, whether it's Mormons voting for Giuliani or Catholics voting for Willard, as disgusting as it is, they'll do it.
They will. Sure as God made little green apples.
But we Democrats could be so bruised and battered and disgusted with the putrefaction of our Constitution and these elected Democrats that are pure yellow cowards. They've got to show some fight when the outcome isn't assured. That will assure us that they will really fight for what really matters later. They can't just roll over until the 22nd of January 09. My Lord, they may not get what they think is an automatic outcome, and it frightens me to death.
And with that,
sorry to be a downer.
No, that's okay. With that, but with that, we gotta roll out in a hurry.
All right. Well, time for you to laugh for me. Talk to you later.
Bye now. Thanks, everybody. A very happy weekend to you. Recharge, rejuvenate. We rejoin the fight on Monday. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. I can't drive this thing.